It's time for Twink This Week at Google. Jeff Jarvis is here. Aunt Pruitt sitting right next to me. I hope he doesn't punch me. And Stacey Higginbotham is here. We will talk about the EU saying Google's ad model, it's kind of illegal. The revolt at Reddit, it's getting worse. And Congress decides AI doesn't deserve Section 230 protection. Did it ever have it? It's all coming up next on Twig.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 720, recorded Wednesday, June 14th, 2023. Beyond Baby. This Week in Google is brought to you by Fastmail. Reclaim your privacy, boost productivity, and make email yours with Fastmail. Try it now free for 30 days at fastmail.com/twit. And by AG1 by Athletic Greens. If you're looking for a simpler and cost-effective supplement routine, AG1's giving away a free one-year supply of vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase of a subscription. Go to athleticgreens.com/twig. And by Melissa. More than 10,000 clients worldwide rely on Melissa for full-spectrum data quality and ID verification software. Make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. It's time for Twig This Week in G-Jaws, Gimcracks, and Gadzooks.
Jesus.
Gimcracks?
Jesus with a G. Well, I don't want to say Google because it's only a little bit about Google.
We get to it eventually.
That's Aunt Pruitt. We get to it eventually. That's the name of the show. You just gave us a show title.
We get to it eventually.
We get to it eventually. AuntPruitt.com/prince. Nice to see you, Aunt.
You too, sir. Good to see you as always.
Also with us, that's the chortle, the jovial chortle of Mr. Jeff Jarvis. Hello, JJ.
Hey,
Jeff. In a blazer.
Normally, he's just a t-shirt guy. You must have worked today.
Yeah, went to New York. Had a breakfast meeting.
He went into New York.
Wow. La-dee-da.
La-dee-da. Did you fly in a helicopter like in Succession? He's the Leonard Tao Professor for Journalistic Innovation, don't you know, at the Craig Newmark. Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Craig, too.
Also here, Stacey Higginbotham from Stacey on IoT.com. The inimitable bundle. Stacey
Higginbotham.
Stacey and Kevin Toffel do that IoT podcast. She's our chip and IoT guru and also the sensible person on the team. Actually,
indeed.
Ant's Mr.
Ant's
too.
Pretty sensible.
Ant.
The two of you, and then Jeff and I are like crazy.
Yeah. this is what long life does to you. You know, it turns you nuts.
So it is really a grab bag of stories today.
It is a potpourri.
But there was a big story this morning. I actually got up at 6 o'clock. Or more like 5:30, because I read this story and I leapt from bed saying, oh no.
Tell me you were dressed. Tell me that, please.
I was dressed. I was dressed. The EU has filed new antitrust charges against Google, saying its online advertising practices violate antitrust laws. Basically... They're saying your monetization strategy, Google, it's illegal. Google was charged on Wednesday with violating EU antitrust laws by using its dominance in online advertising to undercut rivals. The case brought by the European Commission, according to the New York Times, the executive branch of the 27-nation EU, the fourth time Google's been charged with violating European antitrust laws in recent years. At some point, they're going to stop.
Leo? It took them this long to get to the nub of it.
The real issue.
Antitrust wasn't about the browser. It wasn't about search. It wasn't about shopping. It was about advertising.
Yeah.
I've always said that.
The Justice Department brought similar charges in January. It's the online advertising, which I have to say, where Google really does kind of push it with that by being both the seller and the buyer, you know, the controlling both ends. It's kind of a classic antitrust case, if you ask me.
Yeah.
But
it's where they've always been vulnerable because they also have the power of God over it.
Yeah. And I should point out that Google's dominance and success in this field comes at the expense of everybody else who's advertising based. Yesterday, or actually earlier today, Paul Theron on Windows Weekly saying, yeah, he can't survive. His website can't survive on ads alone. He needs a club. And frankly, we're kind of in the same boat where our advertising sales have dwindled.
Well, but you don't use Google advertising, you know?
No, we don't. No, what I'm saying is all our advertisers come to us. Let's say Athletic Greens.
Woohoo.
Our competition is Google Ads.
Yeah.
Not whether we use it. We do use Google Ads, by the way. Of course we do. Everybody does.
Everybody does.
We buy Google Ads to promote the shows.
Even my domain.
Oh, that way. Yeah.
Yeah. But our sponsors are saying, well, should I buy Google Ads where I know exactly who I'm getting? It's an extremely efficient buy. I know, you know, click fraud aside, which I suppose is still a little bit of a problem. But I mean, you could. Every medium has that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't prove to you that whoever listens to this show heard your ad. They might have gotten up and got a sandwich or fast forwarded. We don't know that.
How dare they?
How dare they? But that's been the problem with advertising forever, right? It's
forever.
The problem with
absolutely forever.
With magazines which assert that, well, every the pass around is 7-1 for every, you know, or with TV advertising, they don't know. So, but I think lately agencies and ad buyers are more believe in the digital, because it's digital, right? The accuracy of Google's click rates.
They
get
metrics. They can target. They can be more efficient.
Dude, metrics are so useful from a marketing standpoint, though.
Yep.
It's so powerful when you know where everything is coming from, even down to the hours of the day.
So just stop selling people on Google. I mean, you can't tell them any of that stuff.
Oh, gosh. Even down to like YouTube and knowing when people are watching your videos. Okay, I should publish now because they're going to be looking. Oh, sorry.
Well, ixnay on the Google game.
Okay. Athletic Greens just scalded. They say, no more. Alphabet made $60 billion in profit last year selling advertising.
That's crazy.
But
if you were going to split up Google, how would you split it up?
Well, that's a good question. I think the first thing you got to do, but you know, the biggest problem to me is that Google both makes the market, you know, and sells the ads.
Yeah.
So, you know, when they bought, was it Overture? When they started buying up all the ad tech companies, that's when the problem began. Well,
DoubleClick.
That's the one.
Yeah.
And so, Overture
was Bill Gross's company at Yahoo.
That went to Microsoft, right? Eventually.
Which caused the big, a huge settlement because Google basically stole the model from Bill.
Right. Oh, really? So they gave him some money.
Yeah.
Did they give him $60 billion?
Not quite.
Then he got ripped off.
Yeah.
Because that's what they made last year.
Man, crazy.
With that technology. So, they're really eating up the world. It's tough for everybody else. I think that I've always said Google should be a search engine and just a search engine.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they could do ad sales on that. But they shouldn't have YouTube. They shouldn't have content at all. Because that's also a conflict of interest. Because in the search results, their content.
Well if you're going to take that away from
they're going
to
put. Then
you're kind of getting down to the marrow. What about something a little less radical, like get rid of either the buy side or the sell side?
Yeah, that'd be fine. Margarita Vestager, the EVP of the European Commission, said Google is present at almost all levels of the so-called ad tech supply chain. That's exactly what you were saying, right? Mm-hmm. They do buy and sell.
But I'm with Mr. Jarvis. What took so long for this to come out? Why now?
Because they wanted to go after big, bad Google, and the things that were right in front of their eyes were search and browser. The shopping thing was European stupidity. It was what's his name? What's the other service that he always gets mad at Google? I can't remember the name of it. So they went after that silly stuff. The question long ago should have been advertising. I don't think Google should have to get rid of it all, but they clearly do have a iron grip.
Yeah. And it's bad, not, it's bad for everybody. I mean, it's bad for advertisers too, because there's not a market, you know, free market. It's bad for everybody who's ad supported like us and Paul Thurrott, because
Stacey, do you use any Google ad products, even from analytics or whatever?
I think we use analytics.
Yeah, we use analytics too. Yeah. I don't know what the answer is. It's hard to split companies up after the best place to stop them is before they make the acquisitions. Like, stop, don't buy DoubleClick, but too late.
But I guess DoubleClick, is that you might have known.
Is it fair though?
Well, there were people there. Yeah. I mean, Microsoft, I'm sure we're going to talk about the FTC suing to stop Microsoft from buying Activision.
Yeah.
It's totally fair to be like, hey, this looks like anti. And people actually argued this when Google made some of these acquisitions. They were like, wait a second. And the thing that Google argued that the search market was not a big deal and there was still competition. This is very common across all of these industries. Yeah. Yeah. They argued that it's such a small industry and there's still competition in all these other industries.
So
we don't need to worry about that here. And then, voila, it gets big.
Yeah, when Facebook bought Instagram, Instagram was tiny with like 3 employees and nobody could really see what it was going to be.
But there were 12.
Okay.
It wasn't very many. No, he's right. It was a handful. It was very small.
But DoubleClick was an important established. And I was saying with YouTube. YouTube was, why are you crazy buying this thing? It's going to cost you a fortune in data communication. You're foolish. But DoubleClick was the one I think that could have been seen. I think you're right.
Yeah. Sigh. Anyway, the EU and the U.S. Department of Justice both investigating Google. I can't imagine that anything that will significantly change the world will happen. But I guess, you know, I feel a little vindicated. You know, the truth is, it hurts Google too, because honestly, Google is not as good a search engine. Am I wrong? But I feel like Google is not as good a search engine as it was.
As it was, but in comparison to what now?
Well,
yeah, I mean, why do they need to be any better if the competition isn't necessary?
Let me look for Ant.
It's the web that, Leo, it's not Google's worse. It's the web that's worse.
You find me, you're going to get some pretty interesting
almost
stuff.
Always what will happen with Google is is above the fold will not be search results. Search results will end up below the fold. Mm-hmm. It's the knowledge box, the YouTube videos, all the other experiences above the fold. Mm-hmm. And Google's argument, let's search for something more reasonable, like used cars in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Now I get search results. Look at that.
Yep.
Well, that's
that's interesting.
But again, if you're
looking, I can't read it because it's in dark mode.
Yes, you can. You stop that.
I'll make it bigger.
Don't blame dark mode for your poor
honestly,
vision.
Isn't that easier to read?
No,
it hurts my eyes.
Not. You need it's to get, really get not, better okay. magnification okay. on your readers, Mr. Jarvis.
Rock and roll music. What should I search for?
Gutenberg did not publish on black paper with white ink. Gutenberg published on white paper with black ink, and that's the way God.
There ain't
Gutenberg
no paper here,
be.
Dude. Where's the paper and the ink? Where's the ink?
Jesus.
It's a lighted device, beaming light into your
yeah,
eyes.
Yeah, you're not using the light. You're
it's
trying to mask
bright.
All the light.
All right,
no sense.
Undark it. Where's the dark button?
Bless his heart. Good.
Here you go.
Oh my gosh.
Oh,
yay!
So oh, bright. The relief.
That's ridiculous.
So bright. Anyway, I searched for rock and roll music.
Yep.
I got songs. I bet you every one of these songs is from YouTube Music. I got YouTube. I got YouTube. I got YouTube. I got YouTube. I got people also asked. I got YouTube. There's Wikipedia. That's about, you know, that's several scrolls down.
Well, we don't know what the screen is anymore because it's constant.
Well, that's true.
Well, let's think about this from the standpoint of the quote-unquote normals. Someone's searching for rock and roll music, they're probably more apt to click on
Google says we want to give you the answers that you're looking for.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is what people want. They know it from the data.
So, but I honestly, I feel like let me see. More likely, I'm going to say a more likely search is how do I replace the battery in my phone?
And that should bring up a video because nobody wants to read that. Read about
I don't
that.
Want to watch
I
a video.
I never want a video.
I hate
videos.
Yes, right, but again, you all are not the normal group.
I feel like I'm pretty normal in this. Yeah, I just, yeah. I'm like, oh God, a freaking video. It's
how do I find
longer.
A new umlaut on the keyboard? Here's a 5-minute video of a schmuck talking to us forever.
There's a reason.
If it was a video that was like, here's how to change the battery in your phone, it'd be fine. But I got to dig through this guy selling me something.
But there's a reason those videos do really well on TikTok, too, is because nobody wants to read about stuff like that.
Well, TikTok's a video platform. You know? You couldn't read about it.
Yeah. No, exactly. No, but I'm just.
I'm fine if it gives me. If I knew videos, I could get it in like 60 seconds or less.
Yeah.
Great. Because that's about how long it takes me to click, load, and read through to get the information.
So I just searched for a UFC, Ultimate Fighting Championship. Ooh. This is why publishers are kind of mad, right? Mm-hmm. I'm getting everything I need from Google. I don't need to dig down.
It's commodity. Well, because every publisher is going to give you the exact same information as every other publisher. And in an enlightened society, you can't own information.
Okay.
So
because information is commoditized now that...
It's always been the case. The information, only the treatment of it. And so if you don't do something special, publisher, then...
Well, but even if you did something special, Google would not put it above the fold.
But if you want to really, really read what The Athletic has to say about some sporting thing, then you would go to The Athletic. You might go there directly. You wouldn't go through Google. But there's so little of that in news and media because everybody just wants to use commodity information to get more SEO and clicks and links.
But it was kind of Google that got us there, right? We do that because the only way you could get traffic to your site was through Google. So we game Google.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Google always said,
start your company with
you're not going to win that
ABC
way in the long run because everybody else can do the same thing.
To be at the front.
Danny Sullivan said, I don't think people...
So people used to also just... We would repeat information because we knew our audience needed it and we didn't know if they were getting it elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like most normal people don't visit 30 news sites a day. So I'm just saying that like, it's not just all about SEO. Cause I used to argue, I'd be like, dude, I've already seen this story in 3 other places. And I'd be like, write it. Our people don't necessarily read those places.
Fine. The reason you see it in all those other places is because it drives a lot of traffic. So write it. And that's what God made AI for.
Ben Smith wrote about it in traffic. is that it's the pursuit of everybody having the same thing. And the great example of the two-color dress story, everybody wrote that story,
right?
Adding nothing.
So it became a commodity.
Okay, I'm thinking less about the two-color dress and more about actual news.
Well, like, should I buy mutual funds? That's, you know, CNET realized all its personal finance stories should be written by robots because...
That worked well.
Yeah. Whoops. So one way people have been fixing Google search for some time, I've been doing this, is by adding site:reddit.com and saying search Reddit.
Well,
for
so much
answer.
For that.
Well, yeah. So
how's that working out for you Reddit? This week?
This is a story from Jay Peters in The Verge. Google's getting a lot worse because of the Reddit blackouts.
That's a funny headline.
Reddit's community filtered posts are a great way to beat search engine ads and spam. But what happens when parts of the internet's biggest forum turn out the lights? So this battle, as we reported on this last week, it all started because I think, honestly, Reddit, which is facing an IPO, decided we should get rid of these third-party clients. They decided, but we're not going to do it dumb like Elon Musk did and just turn off the lights.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to pretend that we actually like third-party clients, but we're going to just say, yo, look, you guys, you're taking a lot of traffic from us. It's costing us money. So we're going to charge you 24 cents for every 1,000 impressions.
Okay.
Which ends up being an untenable amount of money. In other words, I think the board said, okay, so this is how we do it. Instead of saying, no, we don't want third-party apps, we just charge them so much that they go out of business.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you a question, Leo. I thought that they were doing this because they thought they had a bonanza of cash to be gotten from OpenAI and company.
Well, this is, so I understand I understand from both sides. So Stephen Huffman.
As usual, Leo.
CEO,
as usual.
I'm a both sides kind of guy.
Yes, you are.
I've interviewed Steve on Triangulation and Alexis Ohanian. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Reddit was a copy of Dig, and Kevin Rose is a good friend. So I've been there since the very beginning. I love Reddit. I use it every day. I think it's the greatest thing ever. But let's not forget, Reddit is not the content. Reddit's the platform. The content is created by
community.
You and me.
Yes, the community.
And let's not forget, very important, the moderators who are all volunteer, who put in a huge amount of time and effort to create those communities and maintain them.
Right.
It's a big, big effort. So moderators are saying, well, wait a minute. We use the API for some of our tools. So Reddit says, oh, no, don't worry. We'll make that work. But it's really clear now that Reddit just said what they really said was, we want to get rid of these third-party tools. And the reason
Twitter
is,
did in the day.
And the reason they're going to do it for the same reason Twitter did, because if you're using Apollo, which is my favorite Reddit client, I'm not seeing the ads. Because the ads don't serve, the API doesn't serve ads. That's not what the advertisers want. So suddenly you're losing a lot of revenue. These guys are sucking bandwidth. So I understand, and it's certainly their right to do so.
Is there a middle ground?
Well, the other thing they did, which really tells you what they were after, they said, oh, and by the way, no adult content will be served by the API. If you want adult content, you got to come to Reddit directly. Now, I don't know. They know how much that drives traffic.
That's but my a lot guess is of money, lot, dude.
It's a significant amount That's of traffic. And once again, you could make the case that the adult content posted on Reddit is really just stolen from adult film studios.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it's stolen
that
itself.
That is copyright theft. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that I've ever seen any of it personally, but I'm told that's the case. I put it in the rundown. EFF had a really good piece about what Reddit has done right and what Reddit did wrong in this case.
I would say it's within their rights to do what they're doing.
Yeah, but
their mistake is in misunderstanding how deeply Redditors would feel about this. In fact,
because they're the ones who create the value.
Yeah.
Right.
In fact, there was a memo that Steve Huffman circulated with Reddit employees saying, look. He said a couple things. One, don't wear your Reddit gear outside because people are mad.
Mm-hmm.
Two, don't worry. It's going to blow over. And then, of course, somebody leaked it to The Verge, and that really incensed.
Famous last words.
Yeah. So the original boycott was supposed to be Monday through Wednesday. It's supposed to be over today. But a number of big sites, r/rmusic, r/iPhone, said, no, we're dark forever. We're going to move, or we're going to something. We're just going to, thanks a lot, Steve. We're going to go dark now. Mm-hmm. So now Reddit is a shadow of its former self. I have to think its IPO is jeopardized. Let's see. Here's what Reddit got wrong. This is from Rory Murr writing yesterday at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. After weeks of burning through users' goodwill, yes, Reddit is facing a moderator strike. That's what's really going on. Because we users aren't necessarily boycotting Reddit, but the moderators are the ones who keep the content up there.
Mm-hmm.
And an exodus of its most important users. It's the latest example of a social media site making a critical mistake. Users aren't there for the services. They're there for the community. We're not there for the platform that Reddit provides.
Mm-hmm.
We're there for the content that we provide.
Amen. The conversation. That's everything. Yep.
Building barriers to access is a war of attrition, says the EFF. I'm sympathetic. I understand they need the revenue. It's expensive. They've never made a profit. Mm. And one of the things Steve Huffman said,
what? Really?
Yeah, to Christian Selig is, you make money on Apollo. You make a lot of money on Apollo.
Mm-hmm.
We make no money. So is that fair?
Yeah, I get it. Business is business. But again, I still wonder if there is some type of middle ground that could be put in place for the community. Yeah. Because charging that amount of money and just sort of putting people out of business is one thing. But
Cory Doctorow, I would say we are in stage two insuratification.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. He's bad.
Well, and I think, one thing the EFF piece says, which I think is so important, is that we know that content moderation at scale is impossible. Pache Mike Basnick.
Yeah.
And so what Reddit did that's so important is to descale conversation down from Twitter and Facebook, put it in the hands of each community, make that work. But it only works if you respect the labor, mostly free, of the moderators and the contributors. When you act like you have the value and they don't, they needed to find a way to share that value with the moderators and with the contributors, then they would have had aligned interests. Okay, fine, charge a fortune to other people because we're gonna benefit along the way.
I'm no developer, but is there some sort of way to have like a fingerprint or a blueprint with when it comes to API connection?
Yeah, yeah. Everybody who uses the API has a API key.
Keys,
that's
right?
Unique to them.
That's what I thought. So why couldn't there be some type of middle ground in place where only this subset of keys is the quote unquote allowed group for this rate, and this group of keys is the allowed group for the other ridiculous gazillion dollar rate?
Well, who are you going to choose for the
Your moderators, like, the ones.
The moderators will be able to use their tools for free. They're not the moderators.
Well, I thought they said that they're still going to get charged.
Not the moderators. I think it's all aimed at the third party apps.
Because didn't they say some of the moderators were using tools?
LLMs.
Yeah, and initially the moderators were very upset because their tools, they thought were going to be charged by the API.
Oh, okay.
Updates from Reddit moderator supports and resources. This is the Reddit post on this, and it's my understanding that they're gonna, you know, the theory is that moderators are volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
They should be paying zero.
Mm-hmm.
They're giving free work. And I think that's essentially what Reddit's saying is, oh, no, we don't mean to charge you. It's really all about the third party.
Okay.
Clients. Christian Selig, who created Apollo, will be on Tech News Weekly tomorrow. So watch tomorrow. That'll be very interesting.
Oh, that'll be good.
Go ahead, Stacey.
No, we just keep building community or decentralized or kind of mutual aid models for the internet because it's so easy to do that here. Because you can build such large communities and tailor them for people cheaply. But we're building it in a capitalistic society. So those are absolutely in conflict. So what happens is when you build your decentralized, your cooperative community up to a certain point, you attract investors. And if you take those investors, you get to get bigger. But then you also have that fiduciary responsibility. And we see this play out again and again. And some people actually game it. Like, I mean, if you look at like Facebook's growth strategy, it was all about building this kind of cooperative community and then monetizing it. But I think there's genuine cases where this happens. And I don't know how we get around this or if we just keep, you know, building up new cooperative communities. And then, I mean, because eventually someone is going to take the money because it's too good. So we just might always be running here.
That's why people propose federation and decentralized networks, because then there is no central place to monetize.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but those are still too complicated. And that's where, like, this is where this kind of breaks down. And I know, you know, yes, I'm a huge fan of decentralization, but decentralization can only go so far and can only attract so many.
Yeah. I mean, there is, as we talked about last week, there's Lemmy, which is a decentralized, a Fediverse version of Reddit, which doesn't even have a mobile platform at all. So it's not, but it does have an API activity pub. So I guess you could write mobile apps. Somebody may be doing that right now as we speak. I don't know where people are going. I think some people, our iPhone is going to Discord. We talked about that last week. It's just gotten worse since last week. And frankly, the users are really incensed that Reddit has been so insensitive to them and are leaving in droves.
Well, yeah. I mean, but I get it. It sucks. But I'm also like, y'all, this is
capitalism.
Yes.
We're just going to replay this until we decide that capitalism isn't how we want to operate either in this area or other areas. And that sounds radical, but I think it's becoming less and less radical, especially as people grow up on the web.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, it's like people are suddenly realizing, oh, wait a minute. Twitter's made of my posts. YouTube's my stuff.
Right.
Reddit's my stuff.
Right.
Oh, you know, it isn't exactly a fair trade. I mean, look, Mr. Beast made $54 million last year. Somebody's doing all right. Some contributors are doing all right.
Yeah.
I don't know. But this is the second issue, which is the secondary. collateral damage that Google is getting worse. And you know who else is going to get worse? And you're right, Jeff, you brought up AI. All that Reddit content is among other things. I mean, all of these large language models are training on our content.
Mm-hmm.
So they're mm-hmm. doing the same thing. They're riding on our content.
Well, but also, Leo, all writing rides on previous content. True. All creation. This is what Larry Lessig would say about copyright, right? Rides on previous. And so this is why I've talked about the show years past. I want a system of ongoing credit to creation and different business models. So it's still business, Stacey, I think, but there's still capitalism of a different sort, but it's not based on huge capital. It's
You're not talking about a link tax, are you?
Structures. No. My idea of credit right is that each contribution to a string of creativity should be able to have credit for it, and then you can reward.
Well, that's like karma points on Reddit. That.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Yeah, and by the way, I pay for Reddit. I don't see ads on the web either. I pay mm-hmm. whatever the I can't even remember what it costs.
I wonder what that percentage of
I must be is. A small.
Yeah. All about as tiny.
Small percentage. I don't even know. Let's see. Reddit Premium. Help support Reddit and get VIP treatment, exclusive access, and monthly coins and exclusive avatar gear.
Because that's another part of the argument. People are complaining, but do you contribute to try to keep Reddit afloat by going premium?
I do. As a result, I can hide ads. I can highlight new comments, and I get special gear.
Yeah, hide those ads. You paid for that privilege.
I paid for it. Honestly, I think isn't that the answer to this? Is that we just got used to everything free on the internet, and that wasn't a very tenable model.
Neither is everything behind a paywall tenable. Look at Lydia Polgreen's column in the New York Times, where she tried to run Huffington Post to provide quality news on the free side of the web. And ironically, of course, it's on the New York Times that's behind a paywall now. And everything behind a paywall, we may have been the way it was before, but it's not going to be good for democracy.
So how do we? This is an interesting conundrum. It's actually one of indeed. The things we've been talking about since day one on this show.
We're a bit spoiled. Many of us want stuff for free for whatever reason.
Well, it's also not exactly free.
No, it's not, right. It's not free because. As you know, we're usually the actual currency that's being used.
By the, always been the case in media. You always still. Your media was always subsidized, Dan.
Right.
Always subsidized, right? Somehow or another. So it was not new to the internet. It's, in fact, just an extension of the old way.
Right, right.
Here's a Felix Salmon piece in Wired in 2011. Why the New York Times will lose to the Huffington Post. Oh, that aged like milk. Oh, nothing dies on the net, does it?
Oh, dude.
You're going to get this from me because the book is almost out. So from the Gutenberg parenthesis, it was not until, printing comes out in 1450. The business model doesn't come until 1710 with copyright. And that idea of content as property was not to protect the creator at all. It was to create a tradable asset so the writer could sell their work to someone who could in turn be secure by trading it on. And that created the metaphor that we have. It's not a forever thing, this idea of copyright, this idea of property.
Right.
The value lies somewhere else. Just like you just said from the EFF, the value is not in the platform. The value is not in the content. The value is in the community.
More than 8,000 Reddit communities have gone dark.
Wow. Out of how many? Do you have any idea?
A lot more. I mean, if you go to Reddit, you might not even know there's something going on unless you say, well, wait a minute.
About half of my communities that I spend regular time on have gone dark.
Yeah.
Wow.
This has got to hurt Reddit. It's got to hurt their IPO. Steve, this may pass, but it's not going to pass fast enough not to be a problem.
Well, look what the public market did to Twitter.
Yeah.
It wasn't pretty. And so now it's basically happening to Reddit before they're even public.
That was a happy beginning.
It's too bad. It really is. But let's take a break and then And again, reminder, tomorrow, Christian Selig. I'm correct in that, all right?
That I think sounds we said right. That.
Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, Christian Selig, the guy who, single developer who created Apollo, which is easily the best Reddit client, really wonderful, much better than Reddit's own clients, will be on Tech News Weekly. Somebody said, you know, Reddit should just buy Apollo, and then that'd solve the whole thing. Another person said, what are you talking about? Google should buy Reddit. Run it for free without ads because they're getting such value.
Okay,
out of it.
Why would Reddit buy Apollo? What would be the play there?
Well, yeah, you would not buy them to shut it down.
No, you don't buy it to shut it
down. They're stealing your ad money. It.
You buy it to put ads on it.
Yeah. Twitter and TweetDeck.
Yes,
what happened when Bill Gross tried to buy TweetDeck?
That's right.
And Twitter said, whoa, we're going to control all this, and we're going to start shutting down the APIs.
By the way, that's when Steve Huffman got really pissed off with Christian Selig, is when Christian said, well, if you want me to pay you $20 million, why don't you buy me for $10 and we'll call it a day?
Right, because you're going to make more.
We'll call it a day. And Steve Huffman thought that was insulting. He was pissed.
Really?
He said, well, we can't do business with this guy. Yeah. Yeah, he got pissed off. So
it's
the whole
fine
thing
to
is
use hardball tactics if you're the big guy.
They would have won in the end.
Yeah, exactly. Let's take a little break. Wow. Come back. Lots more horrible stuff to talk about.
It's, hey, we talked about Google.
It's
we
the did. Internet. This was a Google story all through and through.
Boom.
34 minutes and 19 seconds at Google.
All right.
I just want you to make a note of that.
And no more the rest of this day there.
No, there's a change log. There's actually a lot of Google stuff today.
There's an IoT angle in Google today.
Yes.
Stacey Bate.
Stacey Bate. Yeah. That's what we call this show, Stacey Bate. We've hung waffles from all around the table, and we're hoping a wild Stacey will appear.
Oh gosh!
Our show today.
She thought you were going to the commercial, so she's already muted.
She's already waffling. I know. Yeah. Our show today, poor Stacey. We really put her in a pigeonhole. She's really in a. Our show, of course, you punched me for her yesterday. I mean, last week. I'm still a welt.
I plead a fifth.
That was a great thumbnail for the show.
Yeah, it was. Ant punching Leo. Our show today brought to you by Fastmail. I have been saying for a long time, if email is important to you, pay a little bit for email so you get good service. Because if you're not paying for your email service, if you're not the customer, you're the product. Make email work for you with Fastmail. It's what I use. I've been using it for more than 10 years. It is my email provider. I love Fastmail. I use it, and I am a power user. I use it to host my websites. I have a whole bunch of domains. The email goes through Fastmail. I go on and on and on. Fastmail is amazing. You can, and the Fast, by the way, set up a new Mac, didn't install an email client. I thought to myself, why am I doing that? I'll just use the Fastmail web interface. It's great. It has colors and custom swipes and yes, night mode, Jeff, or not, you know, go either way. Fastmail now has quick settings. From the quick settings menu, you can easily choose a new theme, switch between light and dark, or should I say between dark and light, change your text size without leaving the Fastmail screen. Quick settings will also offer options related to the Fastmail screen you're viewing. You can create a new masked email address. Oh, let me tell you, that's so cool. If you're using one of the big password managers like our sponsor Bitwarden or 1Password, you can actually create an email address that's unique for every website. So not only is the password unique, the email addresses, it all goes into your Fastmail inbox, but it kind of hides who you are and it gives you another layer of security. That's a nice feature. You can also, in the new Fastmail interface, choose to auto-save contacts, which I do. Choose to show public images of senders from external services like Gravatar, which I do. I love seeing those little avatars next to your email so I know who it's from. Honestly, the web client has gotten so good. It's as good as any desktop client, better. Set default reminders for events. I love Fastmail so much I use it not just for email. It's my calendar and contact service. I don't use iCloud. I use OneDrive. I don't use Outlook. I don't use Microsoft Exchange. I use Fastmail because it's private. It's secure. There's somebody on the other end of the line. It's great support. And it works just like all of these to synchronize with all of my systems. So my calendars live on Fastmail. My contacts are on Fastmail. And I have some great Fastmail settings. For instance, if you're in my contact list, I set up Fastmail so that your mail goes to a special mailbox because I know you. You're sending it to somebody I know. I love this. You can add or buy a domain through Fastmail. They'll set up all the records for you so it works immediately. I have a lot of legacy domains. It's pretty easy. It was very easy to move them over to Fastmail. And so that means I get DKIM and SPF and all the authentication protocols at my email addresses. I don't use it for hosting, but I use it for my DNS. It's fantastic. It's fantastic. Fastmail lets you send and receive emails from your own custom domain, unlimited domains, unlimited email addresses, all in one space. For over 20 years, Fastmail has been a leader in email privacy. That's why if you care about email, go to Fastmail for as little as $3 a month. Better spam filters, of course, no ads, and real support from real people. Better productivity. I go on and on. And usually I do because I want you to get Fastmail. It's very easy to move to Fastmail, export your old data, import it into your new Fastmail inbox. But you can also continue to receive email from those other accounts if you want, as long as you want. Just have Fastmail collect it. Fastmail, by the way, it's open source. It uses the Cyrus server. They contribute back with new internet standards and open source innovations that many other email services use. Fastmail's kind of a leader in this field. Reclaim your privacy, boost productivity with the best email service in the world. Ask around. Geeks will tell you. Fastmail. Try it now free for 30 days at fastmail.com/twit. Of course, you can have your business email at Fastmail. You know, that's where Leo FM is. That's where leoville.com is. That's where laporte.email is. All my email addresses, they're at Fastmail. Fastmail.com/twit, including my Spotify podcast, Leo on the Line, with the email address lotlfun, lotl.fun. That email is at Fastmail, fastmail.com/twit. I haven't put anything on that podcast in years. I thought for a while, it's just in case I get fired here, I want to have a podcast, you know, ready to go at all times, just in case. You never know. I could fire myself.
I could. Don't do that, please.
I could. I'm fired.
I'd appreciate it if you wish.
I could. Let's see. Should AI have Section 230 protection? Josh Hawley and Richard Blumenthal. They're his unlikely bedfellows.
What a combination. Mr. Blumenthal, you know, if you're agreeing with Mr. Hawley, you might want to look in a mirror.
They have introduced a new bill today that they shared exclusively with Axios. Okay. Well, I'm reading it on Axios's page. Saying that they're pretty clear about the purpose of the bill. The name of it is the No Section 230 Immunity for AI Act.
We're going to say I actually try to understand
what word does that make?
NS2IFAA. NSTFUA would amend Section 230 by adding a clause that strips immunity from AI companies in civil claims or criminal prosecutions. I don't even know.
It means nothing. Plus the stupidity of people suing AI for libel. When I can go into AI right now and say something terrible about Leo Laporte, and then you're going to sue.
Well, they're suing it for making up lawsuits. Lying. So this is an interesting question because, yes, the initial fault is with people who are like, oh, I'm going to ask a question and believe the answer without checking it. However, and this kind of is like, this is actually very similar, I think, in kind of some of the liability cases or like, how do we hold self-driving vehicles liable? When Tesla's saying it's autonomous driving and people are like, okay, I won't pay attention. And then they crash into things. We're kind of seeing this happen with the results from.
Well, then the user who creates the content and spreads it should be the one liable,
Section
not the machine.
230 protects a publisher from content posted by a third party on his site.
Where does this fit with AI?
Where is that? It makes no sense. It makes no sense. It's not like Section 230 would protect AI companies anyway.
I hadn't been on tech dirt today. Did Mr. Masnick comment on this?
Oh, I'm sure. I haven't looked, but you're right.
But these things are put on I get, I mean, lawmakers look for any way to like shoehorn existing, because new legislation is so hard. So being able to have an established framework, do I think this is the right framework? Absolutely not. But I can see why this is happening, and they might, I can also see them thinking, well, I mean, it's content on the internet. That's what Section 230 is designed to protect.
It, again, so, this shows that neither Dick Blumenthal nor Josh Hawley understand what 230 is. You know what? Josh Hawley's a smart guy. I know he's pretending he's a dumb guy for TV, but he's well-educated. He knows better. And I have to think Dick Blumenthal knows better.
It's political points. It's just AI is now the new evil, so we're going to go after him.
Yeah.
I just, I was on a call.
So annoying.
I got with the FCC today, and they were like, well, because we're on a call about, you know, regulation right now, and we're in the government, and the hottest topic is AI. What do you think about, and this was regarding like connected device privacy, and they just like shoehorned this sucker in there, and you could tell people had no idea like how AI was used in this context.
People are running around like chickens with their head cut off when it comes to AI. I've never seen Leo, such a crazy frenzy of
every company executive is screaming about it. And I'm probably getting in trouble because I'm saying journalists should stay away from it.
Everybody should stay away from it. AI just
was that your I am making a dramatic statement.
AI said, you know, Jeff, dark mode isn't as bad as you think.
Jeff just went into dark mode.
Oh, his lights went out.
See, this is what it feels like when you all go into dark mode.
You look great.
So I actually went to the hearing for the schmuck lawyer who used ChatGPT.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Is he in trouble? Like, is the hearing like?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a show cause hearing, but why he should be censured.
Oh, wow.
There were three lawyers involved. There's a post in the rundown about it.
But, Your Honor, it was a computer.
Well, that's the thing. The guy keeps saying, Schwartz keeps saying, but I never believed it could lie. It was a computer. I thought it was a super search engine.
That's the mistake of Microsoft here, folks.
Oh, my God. This is why I think, the Tesla example is a good example. And, you know, that is kind of how people are using it. And there's only so much you can do to educate the public. Because the public doesn't need to know about the
last
like,
Sunday
deep
on,
AI.
On Twit, we had a wheel bearings takeover. We had the hosts of a wheel bearing, Samable Samad, Nicole Wakeland, Roberto Baldwin. These are all people who report on cars. They were all in agreement that eventually the law will reflect the actual state, which is, and it's already this way in Europe, the manufacturer of the self-driving is liable if a car is under self-driving and plows into a wall. Right now in the U.S., if you're conducting a vehicle, you're responsible. Whatever that vehicle does, you're responsible for it. But ultimately, I hope I'm not misquoting them. I understood them to say, no, it's software. The software is, this is a problem generally. The software liability is, you know, you open that shrink wrap license, it almost always says, hey, we didn't say this would do anything good or right. And we are not responsible for it at all. And in Europe, at least, they're pushing back and saying, no. If you write software that
Stacey, can I answer you?
Actually, in the U.S., the Biden administration on the cybersecurity front.
That's right.
So, sorry, I just wanted to throw that out there, and I can't remember.
We mentioned that when the story happened. This was their cybersecurity policy statement. It didn't have the force of law, but it shows at least the right direction. It wasn't even an executive order, but the administration said, look, if there's a security problem and it's due to software, the software company's liable for that. You know, they screwed up, they're liable.
Stacey, can I answer you on the case of the lawyer, though, and where I think it does diverge?
Oh, sorry, yes.
Because the attorney kept saying, I'm sorry I did this. I didn't know. I shouldn't have used it. Blah, 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 blah. The judge said at the very end.
I love your lead. One of the attorney's attorney said, this case is schadenfreude for any lawyer. That's not what it means.
No, it's not exactly what my next line is. Misusing a word as ChatGPT might.
Yeah. It sounds good. It's German. Yeah.
So as we go along the whole case, the judge said, again, it was the lawyer who used ChatGPT, the lawyer who filed the papers, and the law firm. And after they filed the first thing, the opposing counsel said, we can't find these cases. The judge said, show me these cases. And then they went off and they had ChatGPT make up the cases. The cases were gibberish in the words of the judge, and they put it all in. So the judge said at the end, he said, it's not fair to pick apart people's words, but he said that I've heard the word repeatedly described as a mistake. He said the mistake may have been the first submission, but that's the beginning of the narrative, not the end. As again and again and again, the human beings, the attorneys, failed to do their work. They didn't Google the cases. They could have used Google to say, does this case exist? They mm-hmm. didn't do that. Mm-hmm. They didn't read the cases to see that it was gibberish. They had a responsibility to their client, and Schwartz, the main lawyer, apologized to everybody and left out his client. The judge excoriated him for that too. And so in the end, it was a failure of humanity, not of the machine. And that's what's interesting about this case to me is that, yeah, you can have a tool. The tool can lie, and you know it can lie. And then if you go ahead and spread that lie, whose fault is that? It ain't the machine's. ChatGPT is the wronged party in this suit.
It is still a failure of the machine, sir. It just made up cases.
That's the difference. It's a failure of Microsoft and OpenAI, to Stacey's point, to present it as if it doesn't do that. It does not deal with fact, and we all know that. It is a word probability machine.
Right.
And so it does. We know that it doesn't deal with fact.
Pattern it's
irresponsible of Microsoft to put it in a search engine, irresponsible of the lawyer to have used it, irresponsible of OpenAI. And in fact, there's a story in the rundown somewhere today that OpenAI tried to warn Microsoft early on, said, it can't do facts.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They were kind of mad at Microsoft for rushing ahead with Bing Chat.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
Wow. Hey, when you would talk to the FCC, did you ask them about Comcast?
Ugh.
Comcast.
Oh, this story.
Comcast is complaining. So, you know, the FCC has this new broadband facts nutrition label they mm-hmm. want all broadband companies to provide with clearly labeled pricing, monthly fees, one-time fees, early termination fees, speeds provided, you know, the kind of stuff you would want to know as a customer.
Yep.
Comcast is not happy. It filed last week with the FCC saying, well, we're working diligently to put in place the systems and processes necessary, but this is hard. Two aspects of the order impose significant administrative burdens and unnecessary complexity in complying with the broadband label requirements. They don't like the rules. Now, we know why they don't like the rules. They know how much they charge. Mm-hmm. It can't be that hard. They send you a bill. They know what it costs, but apparently
it's the same argument the carriers made about broadband mapping when it was first proposed in, like, I don't know, 2008, 2010. They were like, oh, this data is too onerous and we don't have it and blah, blah, blah. And then they were like, oh, it'll be competitive information. Yeah, this is the same.
It's BS
thing
from
that they always do.
The FTC was required to implement this rule by Congress in 2021. FCC approved label rules last November, but didn't set a date for them to take effect. They're subject to a federal OMB review because of the requirements of the U.S. Paperwork Reduction Act. Medium and large ISPs would be required to comply 6 months after the OMB review completes. Small providers would have a year to comply. I wonder if we'll ever see these broadband nutrition.
We will. It'll just be so and by then, I don't know how they'll change it. So they'll probably change their fee structure. I'm not even devious enough. They'll basically change their fee structure to not have to.
Something like that.
Yeah.
The problem is that Comcast advertises a low price.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But that's not what you're going to pay on your bill, because when you look at, there'll be the low price plus all of these little fees.
Yep. Cell phones,
made up fees, you know, resort fees.
And they do it. They charge different rates depending on what market they're in, because some markets are more competitive than others.
Yeah.
So if Comcast is going up against municipal fiber in Chattanooga, it charges lower rates.
Right.
There's a lot happening here. And yeah, you're right. They have billing software. They can totally send.
They know exactly what it's going to cost.
They can send it programmatically to the FCC. This is this is one area where I feel like our government needs to like just change the way it does. Like, I think these labels and transparency are important, and it's clear that the government is like looking at them more closely. Like if you look at the FTC's resort fee issues and that sort of thing, businesses have programmatic pricing already because they have billing software. Most of them do. So if you can give access to that via API to a government entity, it's A, pretty relatively simple. And B, when you change the prices and things change, it could automatically be reflected. And why the government doesn't demand something like this as part of these rules is beyond me, because what happens is these sorts of databases get outdated and,
they already watered the bill down. The label was supposed to appear on your bill, but Comcast got them to change that. God, are they evil? The only good thing is they are losing customers like water. I mean, it's just pouring out of them. And
well, that's not true. They're losing cable customers, but they're not losing broadband customers.
That's right. Yeah, because you got to have internet.
Yeah.
Leo, Comcast cares.
Yeah. What, Frank left, right? Frank's not there anymore.
Yeah, where is Frank now?
He went somewhere. So Frank, I can't remember his last name, was the guy on Twitter who was...
Eliason.
Eliason. It was a Comcast Cares account. And so he was answering and turned Comcast into a nice, warm, fuzzy...
Well, yeah.
Outstanding.
And then he left for a better job.
Smart man.
Yeah.
You go to the greener pastures.
He is a consultant.
Yeah. Okay. Let me show you how I used social media to fool people into thinking Comcast cared. Music companies
He was probably someone. I mean, he genuinely did care. I think he genuinely was trying to.
Yeah. But it was kind of an uphill battle.
Yeah.
Music companies are now suing Twitter for copyright violations. I think they're protected by 230 again, but we'll see. The National Music Publishers Association alleges Twitter violates the copyright of songwriters by using their music on its platform without permission. The other social media platforms, TikTok, Facebook, Snap, YouTube, all have agreements that pay the music industry a lot of money. These companies are seeking $150,000 for every piece of work infringed. Yeah, good luck getting that out of Elon.
Right.
I feel like in this case, I'm kind of on Elon's side. He's not responsible if somebody posts a song.
Yeah.
On Twitter, Section 230 protects him. As long, you know, and they need to be able to take it down, and they do, I'm sure. Even if they don't, they're still protected.
But
right?
The labels are like, you should have something in place that's going to scan.
They want content ID like YouTube has. YouTube,
but then you end up with false positives.
YouTube said it paid $6 billion to the music industry last year. Whew. $6 billion.
It's pretty amazing,
man.
And they still take it.
There's enough to go around, y'all.
Yeah.
I'm like, come on. YouTube makes a lot of money.
Yeah, this is true.
Facebook says it's paid hundreds of millions of dollars. But that's in both YouTube and Facebook's case, that those are certain songs, which, you know, when you're a creator, you probably know about this because you create YouTube stuff. You go there and you pick a song from that pool of songs, right? You can't just play Achy Breaky Heart because you like it.
Nope.
You have to pick one of the songs.
They have something already available for you that's cleared, if you will.
Before Elon took over, Twitter had been talking to music companies naturally. As soon as Elon took over, those conversations ended.
I had breakfast this morning with Adam Kovacevic, who's from the Chamber of Progress, which is a trade association on the left side of things. And we had it was an interesting conversation about the whole process of creating of YouTube creating the identity structure for a song, whereas it could have just been as simple as take it down, but by giving the monetization opportunity, you can leave it up but make some money and you're gonna share the money, it created a whole new business model for music and a whole new opportunity for creators. And it's a better way to think rather than just go to a pure copyright structure and say, okay, there's copyright. It enables this. Now what can we do about that that's going to help everybody? And then we need more of that kind of thinking.
Well, it's also was great for YouTube because it didn't cost them anything, right? If we take it down, we're not going to make any money.
Yep.
This way, we don't care who gets the
aligned interest,
the pennies on the dollar that we pay off. We still get the 99 cents. We're going to take a break, and then we come back. Big Meat, still alive.
Wait. Huh? What?
What?
This what? Man knows how to do a tease.
Now I got to look through this rundown.
Yeah, find the Big Meat story. See if you can find the Big Meat story.
I actually need to get some water. So,
guess who our show is brought to you by today? AG1 from Athletic Greens. Don't you go anywhere. You are an Athletic Greens user.
In fact, AG1.
When they came to us and said, can we buy ads? You said,
heck yeah, I've been on them for a long time, man. They're good stuff.
2010 it was founded in. And as soon as I started talking about AG1, everybody, not just you, everybody, oh yeah, I love that.
Mm-hmm.
You know why? It tastes good.
Yep.
There's a lot of other, energy or vitamin drinks or supplement drinks you can drink that are, you like have to choke them down. It's like medicine, right?
It's like Greek yogurt.
Yeah, it's like Greek yogurt. I like Greek yogurt, but I understand what you're saying.
I hate Greek yogurt.
You don't want to eat it. You don't want to eat it. AG1 from Athletic Greens gives you everything your body craves in one daily nutritional drink that tastes great. Mix it in with 12 ounces of cold water. Doesn't even have to be warm water. I mean, that's cold water. Shakes up, dissolves beautifully. Tastes great. It's my how I start my day. It's wonderful before I even eat anything because you know that 12 ounces of water also fills you up, which is kind of a little secret.
Yep.
And it saves you money. All those supplements, I was taking a fistful of supplements, all now in one simple drink from AG1, costs less than $3 a day. It saved me three or four times that much. And boy, with the powerful long-term results, you get one scoop of AG1, you get all your supplements, you get all your vitamins, you promote long-term gut health, 75 high-quality minerals, vitamins, pre- and probiotics.
That's the key, the gut health, man.
If you're looking for a simpler, cost-effective supplement routine, AG1 by Athletic Greens. In fact, right now, if you get a subscription with your first purchase, you'll get a free one-year supply of vitamin D and five free travel packs. I love those travel packks. When we're traveling, instead of all the pill boxes and stuff, I just bring the little travel pack, one a day, and I'm good. athleticgreens.com/twig. Bet you they didn't say that on any of the other podcasts.
No.
athleticgreens.com/twig.
On this podcast, twig. Someone actually uses
We AG1. Both do. It's delicious. In fact, I'm craving it a little bit right now. I might have to go in the other room and make some. I don't need it, but I like it.
It's good.
athleticgreens.com/twig. Thank you. Big Meat loses. I mean, wins. It didn't lose. It's winning.
I'm so confused.
Well, it's a great article on Bloomberg about the fake meat. You know, Impossible Burger and Beyond Meat. Like how that was going to change the world. And
you mean it's the edible NFT?
Yeah, it's the cover of Business Week this week. Turns out Big Meat is still in biz because people look at these, you know, phony meats and they go, look at the, I don't even understand what those ingredients are. It's really highly processed. And we're being told now highly processed is not good.
Dude, I was telling y'all that when this stuff was coming out.
You knew.
Yes.
I still haven't had any of it. I haven't tasted it. I don't know. Is it good?
I tried the one Impossible Burger or whatever it was at Burger King or what have you.
Yeah.
And I get why people would like it, but no.
But it's, dude. You know, it's a test tube thing.
Well, okay. Let us not freak out about test tube meat for a second here.
Oh,
it
I'm
is highly
out.
Processed, highly processed proteins, and it is lab generated, and there's different ways of generating it. Some of them are generated in like yeast type products. Some of them are generated in other ways.
So one of the things they realize is that the blood that drips out of your burger is like important. So that's called
Heme.
They made heme with genetically modified yeast. They patented, this is the Impossible Burger, soy leghemoglobin. Like hemoglobin.
Okay. You were like doing like weird scare tactics that like influencers Laurel as opposed to being Pettis. A man of science.
Well, I'm have to serious, tell you, man. It's worked okay. because people have gone back to beef. You know what the ingredient okay. is in a hamburger?
Okay,
beef?
No.
Beef.
Mew.
Meat.
That's what's in it.
If we talk about.
Where's the beef? Where's the beef?
Is it environmentally better, Stacey? Is it healthier for you?
So here's the deal. You shouldn't be eating burgers every day. You shouldn't eat an Impossible Burger every day.
Nope.
I've tried many of the faux meats, and I tend to only use them like if I'm totally like, oh, I need the feel of a sausage in a vegetarian dish. But the idea here is to help people who only eat meat or meat is an essential part of their diet, bring in plant and not use as much meat. And I think they have been successful in that way. So some people have switched from eating meat 7 days a week to maybe only doing it 5 days a week. Did anyone really think big meat was going to go away?
Yeah.
No.
Well,
no.
The investors who put hundreds of millions of dollars into these companies might
people
have thought
so. People are still buying these faux meats.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what they call them.
I like, I'll get a quinoa burger or a, brown rice burger.
Black bean burger.
Those, yeah. Black bean burger. Those are, I know what's in them. I feel like they're good for me. They got fiber. I'm not killing an animal to eat it. That's, I understand.
Mushroom burger.
Probably eat sprouts too.
I love sprouts.
But not everybody's that way. Some people were like, I want, and I think there's value there. And I think over time, this will only expand, especially, look at the price of beef and what's happening is people in other countries, are like, oh, you've got to cull your beef herds because of carbon emissions.
Right.
We're going to start seeing real meat become prohibitively expensive in some places. And
I say that time is now.
Even here, thanks to things like climate change.
You're right.
And this will be a substitute for people who really want that mouthfeel of a
Have you ever priced the dry aged ribeye at Whole Foods.
Man, this stuff's,
it's more than gold.
It's expensive, dude.
It's $500 an ounce.
I mean, part of what's happening is we're pricing in the externalities of these industries that have historically even been subsidized.
Yep. I am ready to eat, once they can culture cells in a vat and make muscle matter that way, maybe that'll be okay. But these are really chemical stews. They are that are designed to make people who want meat think they're eating meat.
With a touch of paprika.
Anyway,
well,
the Business Week story. The Business Week story is really that it hasn't done that well. Although some have said that's because the big meat, actual meat, is doing everything they can to suggest that, these fake meats are somehow unhealthy or full of chemicals.
Yes. I mean, yeast is around us all over. It's a fungus. It's and some of these others are used made with like mushrooms.
And it's delicious.
So yeast is not like it's not like a weird scientifically chemical stew, unless we think, we're chemical stews, if you look at it that way.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, I just put in the chat
walking meat
that synthetic human embryos have been made.
For eating?
No.
I don't think that's it. I'm against it. I'm just going to say I'm against it.
Just
would
have made up.
Maybe the Democrats want that, but not me. I'm just kidding. I'm just teasing. Where'd you put that?
That's in the chat.
Which chat? There's many chats.
The IRC chat.
The IRC. You put that in there, huh?
That goes fast.
Yeah, I don't see it.
You don't?
No.
No. Because our IRC is always busy.
I'm right there. I'll put it in the Discord.
No, you put it somewhere weird in IRC. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't see it in IRC, Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff, I don't know.
Jeff, do you not know how to work the IRC?
1823, Jeff Jarvis, from fake meat to fake embryos, colon.
I see it. I see it in the Discord.
Okay, well, let's do it.
I don't see it in the chat.
I don't see it in IRC. It's It's probably because he won't.
Yeah, I don't see it in IRC.
Well, it's a dumb story anyway. So forget it.
Oh, Scooter X is like, which IRC channel? Maybe just
synthetic human embryos created in groundbreaking advance. Oh, this is just begging to get, you know, picketed.
Yeah.
Breakthrough could aid research into genetic disorders, but raises serious ethical and legal issues.
You think?
Is it like stem cells?
Because
that was pretty
controversial. Synthetic human embryos using stem cells, so it's, yeah. You know, it's from there. But yeah, so
yeah,
yeah. Hook this up to AI, and oh, humanity's doomed.
The impossible baby.
Oh, well, I like it.
Beyond baby.
We need a bell for that one.
Anyway, I don't know. It's a front cover big Bloomberg Business Week, along with a lot of stuff, of meat in a pile coming out of a meat grinder. Beyond impossible, how fake meat became just another food fad.
Speaking of fake meat, the Taco Bell Enchirito is back, and I had one this week.
Is it made with meat?
Bless your heart.
It is a little disappointing. I used to have it years ago, but wasn't what I remembered.
Yes.
That man in his Taco Bell.
Did you read the New Yorker article on research? It was like the people in the Taco Bell's innovation lab.
I've got a printout here somewhere because I want to read that. Yes, but
it's got a printout.
You could Google it and just read it right here. We could put Taco in the Bell.
I've used my free article, Stacey.
You don't subscribe to the New Yorker?
You don't subscribe to the New Yorker?
What is wrong with you, my friend?
You look like a New Yorker. I know. Cartoon. I mean,
jeez, Louise, you're really.
I thought you were going to say I look like a New Yorker cover. I look like a New Yorker cartoon.
You actually,
thank you very much.
Yes, he does. He looks like an Ed Koren cartoon. He belongs in a Koren.
Jeez.
Oh dear. Sorry.
All right. I'm looking for the story. Is it this week's New Yorker? This is why.
No, it was a while back.
I can't keep up with the New Yorker. That's the problem.
It was fun because it had this researcher who was like talking about like how to like spent 20 years developing, like trying to push this idea of a handheld taco that didn't spill out. So you could
Taco Bell's
driving.
Innovation Kitchen, the front line in the stunt food wars. How did the chain outdo Burger King's bacon sundae?
Eesh.
Pizza Hut's hot dog stuffed crust. Cinnabon's pizza bun. I like that. I like there's a some
the
sort
bacon
of,
sundae was
there's
good.
Some sort of protein drink on the market for old folks. You know, I watch those ads. And it says now in Cinnabon inspired flavors.
Yes, yes.
Is that cinnamon? That's just cinnamon, right?
It's just cinnamon. It smells like the airport.
It could be vanilla and butter.
And extra sugar.
What's a Cinnabon?
Yeah, extra
it's not
sugar.
Even, it's a Cinnabon-inspired flavor.
Well, that's because they didn't get the licensing from Cinnabon.
It's just disgustingly sweet. Right.
It's got to be better than KFC's fried chicken-flavored nail polish.
What?
That's in this article.
Because you bite your nails?
No.
Lois Carson always wanted to find a new way to fold a tortilla. Life's like an experiment to me, she said. For 23 years when she... You know what I just read? So there's a new movie called Flamin' Hot.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently all made up.
Jobs.
He didn't invent the Flamin' Hot.
Oh, yeah. The Flamin' Hot or Cheetos story has been made up forever.
He made it up. And now there's a movie... Eva Longoria directed about his life.
I need to make up something.
And the people back at the Cheetos factory said, he didn't invent that. We've been working on that for years.
But they recognized a good marketing opportunity when they saw it. They were like, this guy,
I need to make something up.
Go for it, Ant.
I thought we'd do it every day on this show.
This show is the Flaming Hot Cheetos of podcasting, I think. Actually, it's not. The Hot Ones is. Oh. We should really give the Hot Ones all the credit on that one.
Good show.
Let's see. Quantum computing advance. This is for Stacy because she understands.
She's the only one that understands
smart
it.
Person stuff.
Stacy,
I don't understand quantum physics. I'm just going to tell you that right now.
Oh, I'm disappointed.
You disappoint us so
much.
Oh, I mean, I can talk to you about the story and I understand, but I just.
Quantum computing advance begins new era, IBM says. So they now have a quantum chip with 12, what do you call those, nanobits?
Qubits?
Qubits.
Qubits?
They got What's Noah? A qubit?
I don't think we can quote Cosby anymore.
It's not, I can't do it anymore. It's sad.
It's like a Woody Allen joke.
On Wednesday, on. That's today. Oops. IBM research, this how fresh this news is. Fresh as a flaming hot Cheeto on a Taco Bell bun. IBM researchers announced they devised a method to manage the unreliability in a way that would lead to reliable, useful answers. Kind of like ChatGPT.
ChatGPT. Well, this is what this is actually fascinating, that its approximation is mm-hmm. where computing is.
So you may remember we had the story a few years ago that Google researchers said they had achieved something called quantum supremacy, which was they were able to do a task more quickly on a quantum computer than a conventional computer could do. The Google researchers said they did in 2.5 minutes something it would say take a regular computer 10,000 years to do. That's been somewhat debunked. They found a computer that could do it in 5 minutes, so... I don't know what it was in an Osborne. I don't know what they were talking about. Anyway, so they don't want to use that phrase quantum supremacy. They're talking about quantum utility. We are entering this phase of quantum computing I called utility, said Jay Gambetta, vice president of IBM Quantum. The era of utility, like it's actually useful.
Okay.
It does something you want.
Okay. If it does,
they used it to
want,
solve a physics access? Problem tied to magnetism. We're
yeah,
not
it's kind
go,
of an interesting. We're not, yeah, it's kind oh, of an. Yeah,
we are going to go into it.
No, yeah, absolutely. I'm going to read this text from the New York Times and pretend it makes perfect sense.
Okay.
The IBM researchers in the new study performed a different task, one that interests physicists. They used a quantum processor. Oh, it's 127 qubits.
Okay.
That's mm-hmm. about yay big. To simulate.
And they're using it to model this.
The behavior
problem.
Of 127 atom scale bar magnets. That's really, really small bar magnets.
Okay.
Tiny enough, these bar magnets, because they're the size of an atom, to be governed by, and this, I'm not making this up, the spooky rules of quantum mechanics.
Oy.
Okay.
Spooky. Is that different from the creepy rules of social media?
They actually use this in physics. This is actually a physics term.
Yeah, I think
term,
Feynman was somebody like Feynman coined the term spooky.
Yeah, spooky.
Yeah,
it's because it's
Einstein. Einstein said
unknown.
It was spooky. That's right.
Yeah,
it's, spooky it could, action.
We don't
at a
know.
Distance. Yeah, we don't. It's spooky. Yeah. We don't know. Einstein.
It's not
didn't
a zero.
Like,
it's not a one. It could
like
be both.
Quantum.
It's spooky.
He didn't like it. He didn't buy it. He said God does not play dice with the universe. But
he was wrong.
So apparently this problem is actually cannot be solved. Even in the largest, fastest supercomputers, it's just too complex on the quantum computer. Get ready. This calculation that a supercomputer can't even do. The quantum computer solved it in less than a thousandth of a second.
Mm.
How
was
do you
it
know
right
it's
or
right?
Wrong?
I know. I don't. You
but,
know.
So here's actually, but for complex, but solvable instances, the quantum and the traditional computer produced different answers, but the quantum one was right. So
according to who?
Yeah, that's to
according
me, that's
to
really
these people,
interesting.
Right here. These people, the ones wearing all the glasses, those are the smart people.
There's like two,
it was Berkeley researchers at Berkeley.
Yeah. They're smart people. See, there it is. There's the IBM
and
it's
IBM.
Only, it's only 127 quantum qubits.
Qubits.
But why is this? It's giant.
That's a lot
it's bigger
of qubits.
Than a room. It's a lot of qubits.
All yeah, right. That's actually significant. Well, because like to keep things in quantum state, you have to like if you're going to isolate things in a quantum state, you need to pack it. It needs to be vacuum packed or it needs to be kept really cold. There's like lots of things because they want to fluctuate. And we've got to keep them stable and make them fluctuate in constrained circumstances. So it takes a lot of, I mean, physical, like actual power, like power consumption to keep things cold. But it takes a lot of energy to keep something that wants to change stable and then change it only when you want it to.
So anyway, this is a fairly big breakthrough, I'm told.
Did you know that if you took the tight end and had him run just maybe 2 yards outside of the linebacker and stop right in front of the free safety, that'll allow your split end to go over the top on the post route and you can hit him at about 20 yards down the field.
Dang.
Did you know that?
How fast did you figure that out?
He is on a computer.
That's what it sounded like y'all were saying to me.
I thought I explained it really well.
What the hell are y'all talking about, man?
Anyway, New York Times says a new era has begun. Can you feel it?
Sure.
Sure.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Higginbotham. I just don't get
No,
that
it's
stuff.
Okay. I was trying.
I now understand football, though. I have to say, something clicked.
I still have no idea.
Something about tight ends and... let's see. For the first time ever in the first 5 months of this year, wind and solar generated more power than coal in the U.S.
Yay!
According to Scientific American. But the guy who wrote this, or actually, I guess he's quoting Andy Blumenfeld, an analyst who tracks the industry at McCloskey. You might be curious what Andy's thoughts about this are. From a coal perspective, it has been a disaster. The decline is happening faster than anyone anticipated. That's my West Virginia accent.
That's so good.
It's not good.
It's not good.
Coal is in deep trouble. Power markets have witnessed a precipitous drop in coal-fired generation this year, driven by low natural gas prices, a mild winter, and a wave of coal plant retirements. I think renewable energy is a good thing. A lot of jobs. It doesn't pollute as much. Everything pollutes. I'm polluting right now.
Remember at one time it seemed like whenever the discussion
of... That's because I had an Impossible Burger for lunch.
Oh, gosh. Whenever there's a discussion of trying to get rid of all of this stuff going on with coal, the first argument was all the jobs are going to be lost, but...
There aren't that many coal miners.
He clearly said right there, we're creating jobs.
Yeah,
and that should have been the argument before.
In renewables, that's right. Wind and solar generated 252 terawatt hours in the first 5 months of the year compared to 249 terawatt hours from coal. We're still generating an awful lot of power with coal, but good. Coal generated almost half the country's electricity as recently as 2008.
Man.
Fortunately, it's been in a steady decline ever since as a wave of older coal facilities retired, replaced by a combination of natural gas and renewables. Natural gas has its own issues.
I have a better energy source. Stacy's keyboard fingers.
I was writing about analog computing.
Nice.
For AI.
Nice.
We could harness your floppy.
We could. If it were if I had a piezo sensor in there, every time I track down, I could be generating power my Bluetooth to connect my.
Kilowatts, I tell you. Yes.
If you wore a corduroy shirt, you could generate the static electricity.
Static electricity.
Let's see. Google is finally going to launch. Actually, this one's up your alley, Jeff.
It is.
It's long delayed news showcase product this summer. This was kind of a response to the whole snippets and link text.
Yeah, it's Google says we're not going to pay for content for search and that kind of stuff, but we're going to, like YouTube, this is the problem, Leo. You said that they shouldn't own YouTube, they shouldn't have content. Well, the publishers pushed them to say, pay us for something. Google wasn't going to pay them for the old thing, so they created a new product, Google Showcase. They have 150 publishers in the U.S. who are up there. They're going to pay them some buckets of money to go away. But at the same exact time, the News Media Association, News Leaders Association, once again, lobbying to get the JCPA, the Journalism Something Protection Act, passed. California is about to pass their version of this, in which they're gonna. So the publishers on the one hand are saying, thank you, Google. I'll take your money and put it in my pocket. On the other hand, they're saying, kill Google and make them give us even more money. And I don't know what's going to happen here.
Wall Street Journal says News Corp has reached a global multi-year deal with Google. Combined annual revenue of more than $100 million. New York Times deal with Google will pay $100 million a year over 3 years. Is this going to be a news product like Google News? I mean, we already have Google News. Is this going to be
It's pretty much that. It's just a showcase of these places. And I guess this means that, I don't know. This is the one thing I don't know. If I read a Wall Street Journal story on Google, will I get it for free? It's a little
don't
weird.
Don't they have deals with like Reddit, where if you're a Reddit user, you could go past the paywall and
sometimes, you know.
So and Apple, do something
I should
like
look
that?
At this because Apple has Apple News, which I pay for. And I think I get some Wall Street Journal articles for free. I pay for the Wall Street Journal, but let me just look here.
Stop showing off your new computer.
Let me just open up this fine, light 15-inch laptop. That
it doesn't make any noise.
It's very quiet. It's all solid state. Personalized ads in Apple apps. Okay, turn on personalized ads.
I was wrong. It's 1,000 publishers.
That's a lot. They're not going to all make as much as we just quoted. Yeah, so here's a Wall Street Journal article. And yeah, I can read it on Apple News without ads, but Apple puts its own ads in there. So they must have made a rev share deal.
They made a deal. Yeah, they're licensed or a licensing deal. Yeah.
I can look at the New Yorker, same thing. Oh,
I'm wrong again. It's 150 publications in the news showcase. Google's also doing other nice things for 1,000 publishers.
Yeah, Google still has its news initiative, which invests in local news organizations.
No, if JCPA passes, I think the news initiative would die.
Yeah.
And Google would say, okay, you get money out of us through Bakshish, you're not going to get money out of us for charity.
I mean, look, I understand everybody's desire to save journalism.
But saving some of these papers isn't saving journalism. Some of them are crap.
You said it, not us.
Yeah. I mean, you obviously, this is kind of your subject. This is your wheelhouse. Yeah. So when the tight end, just explain to me that
I put it in Discord.
I see. I'm seeing it. Yes, it's very good.
It's a great explanation right there.
Yeah, right there. Oh, it's obvious.
See, Y is the tight end.
Yeah.
And if Y goes across the field, what should happen is this person here would follow Y.
Yeah.
And so you dump it behind to X. Right there.
And then the free safety is pulled off by the tight end.
We had the wrong camera.
And then your wide receiver can catch the ball and nobody's going to stop him. He's going to go right into the end zone.
Else, if free safety goes to X over here.
Then you pass to Y.
Leaves the Y.
Because you got a tight end. So it's an option.
Tandem routes.
It's a tandem route.
See?
TR, we call it.
TR.
It's a TR. It's a tandem route. I want to watch a football game
Coach
with you.
LaPorte.
You can explain it all to me. When I was a kid, I had a loose leaf book, Frank Gifford Teaches Football, and it had a lot of these kind of diagrams in it. And I didn't know what it meant, but it was cool. And I had, we used to play on the back lot there. It was
Oh my gosh. We had the plays and didn't understand them. Oh.
No, but we ran them.
Somehow.
Yeah. I'm doing a TR right now.
Sorry for derailing this.
I wasn't that interested in journalism anyway. So what are we going to do to
save... Here.
Daisy's media allergy.
What are we going to do? All right, let me do an ad. You know what? We could be out of here and having waffles before the sun goes down. Would you like to do
that? What is happening? Sure.
I'm
not even hungry yet.
Oh, well, let me then do the Google changelog.
Wow.
The Google changelog.
Great stuff happening from Google this week. Google was happy to announce that Google Lens can now identify rashes and other skin conditions. Just point your phone at your lesions.
This is really helpful, but I would not want to have been on the team that had to train it because pictures of rashes are disgusting.
Oh, the new Google Lens capability will search skin conditions that are visually similar to what you're seeing on your skin. The company notes search results are informational only, not a diagnosis. Consult your medical authority for advice.
Please.
Don't look. Scanning right
scrolling.
By it.
Thank you. Jeez.
That was really gross. Okay. I don't want to know. You have atopic dermatitis. You know, a simple salve or lotion would help with that.
All right. Google. So I have rosacea. How do I do this?
Just, let's see. Is it out now? Today,
just use Lens.
Today, it's announcing another. So yeah, use Lens on your picture of your warts.
Google, I have PK.
Oh, don't do that. I don't want to see that. That's disgusting.
Dude, if I'm wearing short sleeves, you can see it regardless. It's not disgusting. No,
I wasn't talking about you. I was talking about Jeff's nostrils. I don't know. I don't even know what PK is.
There's a show thumbnail.
I don't. No, it's not disgusting. It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Immersive maps. Let's see. There's a bunch of stuff. Google previewed glanceable directions earlier this year to bring live trip progress directly to your directions route overview screen. This is worse than quantum computing. You'll get current ETAs, reroutes, and directions on where to turn without having to start navigation. So it's like it's navigation without navigation. Like it's sort of kind of like knows what you're up to because it's watching you walk around and it'll give you some ideas.
Okay.
As you go.
That's fine.
Ooh, that's super creepy.
Yeah, this is exactly the, you know, what Eric Schmidt said, you know, as you walk by.
Or helpful.
Could be. Well, that's the thing.
Or helpful.
Well, that's both. And sorry, I said abroad. I had PK, but I have KP, and it diagnosed it. It was one of my two options.
Good. It worked.
How did you ask, Stacey?
I just did a lens search. I just took the lens icon. And
so it's working. Nice. Yeah. I actually think that's great. Right now you send it to your, sometimes you send it to your doctor and you say,
no, right now you're like, you have to say, I have a weird rash on my ankle that has this.
Yeah, it's better to have Google do it.
And then have to wait 2 months for an appointment.
It shows you all those photos, but this just gives you the relevant photos, which is nice.
More and more people are getting the SGE, the Search Generative Experience, AI powered snapshots.
Sure.
If you ask about a place or a destination, you'll even get reviews as part of the SGE. On the shopping front, Search is getting a virtual try-on tool. This is from 9 to 5 Google. That uses generative AI to predict how clothes will drape, fold, cling, stretch, and form wrinkles and shadows on a diverse set of real models in various poses.
Sure.
This is, I have to say, in all honesty, in my 66 years, I have never considered how any article of clothing will drape, fold, cling, stretch, or form wrinkles on my body.
What?
Neither have I.
Of course you have. That is how you measure if clothing fits or not.
Oh, that's what that's called?
I know how. If it fits, if it's tight or loose, that's how it fits.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Please explain.
The things you're looking for when you try on an outfit or something, you're actually looking like, does it give me a weird thing like kittis across my chest? Oh, well, then maybe that's a little too tight. Or does it, I don't know, do something like this? Then maybe it's too big on my shoulders. It's hard because I wear clothes that mostly fit me.
Okay.
I mean, but that's the drape. And then how it falls, like, is it going to skim like the fat parts of your body? Or is it going to fall in a flattering way? Is it more structured?
Okay, I take that back. I think about that only when it was time to go buy a suit.
Yeah, you don't want a suit to look rumpy.
That's the only time.
I guess so. Women are always wearing suits. This is starting with Anthropologie, Everlane, H&M, and Loft. Look for the try-on badge and then select a model that resonates most with you. This is actually interesting because they're using the Monk skin tone scale to match your skin tone, body shape, and ethnicities and hair types. So they want to get the body that matches.
Good stuff.
I'm not going to.
That's actually really cool because models.
Yeah.
Only.
Yeah, they look the same.
Pretty much. And they don't look like the rest of us mostly.
How many times have I looked at a catalog and say, I'm going to buy that, but it's not going to look that way on me? You know that. I say that all the time.
Yeah. And it's the draping and the folding that are going to make it look different.
Help Me Right comes to Gmail for Android and iOS. This is AI, right? In your mail. Like on the desktop app, you're first greeted with an introductory prompt for generative AI. Afterward, a Help Me Write button will appear in the bottom right corner. Tapping it lets you enter a prompt with a create button featuring a blue-purple wave. As it works, you generate a new one and leave feedback before inserting it. Have any of you received any emails yet that look like an AI wrote them?
All the time.
Also known as pitch mails.
Yeah, all my emails. All my emails look like,
hi, Hands-On Photography. We love your show.
Yeah, that's a big one. Yeah. I listen all the time.
Didn't know that was my name.
Yeah. Let's see. Should I just pick one of my many? Let's see. I really like the ones. Oh, here's one. Hello, Alex. I'm reaching out on behalf of, I won't name the company, to share news about the impact of artificial intelligence on job sectors in the United States. Delete.
Yeah.
You know, somebody subscribed me to a whole bunch of Trump email, and it's disappeared.
Boy. You have fans.
It was me.
I actually enjoy I enjoy it because like the minutes after he left the courtroom yesterday or Monday. No, yesterday. They were just getting emails saying, help me pay for this, you know, basically. Right.
Yeah.
Raised $2 million in the first couple hours.
Yeah, that's a business, man.
It's a good business. It's a good business. Google's new generative AI. Oh, I did that. June feature drop plus Android 13 QPR 3 rolling out. All about Android. Probably talked about this yesterday on the Pixel 7 Pro. You got macro video, palm timer, new wallpapers, new home panel. Pixel Watch also got new features. SPO2 tracking.
Oxygen tracking.
What's the SP?
It's your oxygenation.
SPO2.
It's the oxygen levels in your
blood.
It's like a pulse oximeter.
High and low.
So my watch broke. Should I get a Google Watch?
No, get an Apple Watch.
No.
Get a real phone.
I'm not in the cult.
Get a real phone. Join the cult. Get an Apple Watch. Then you can get the Vision Pro in a year.
I love the phone. I just hate iOS.
What do you mean you love the phone, but you hate iOS?
The hardware.
The
hardware is great, but I don't like iOS.
Pixel Watch has oxygen tracking, high, low HR, heart rate alerts, and a metal band is coming. I'm sorry. Is it a metal band or a metal band?
Or a rock band.
Wait, that's terrible for like airports. Like,
yeah,
I
don't wear metal
bands.
Yeah. No, this is a metal band. What am I talking about? It's titanium. Yeah, I just take it off. I don't, when I go through the metal detector,
I
just
don't take things off. There is no taking off.
Then you get what you get.
Takes nothing off.
I did actually inquire how this band would drape, fold, and mutilate on my wrist.
Just to make sure it worked.
Google Home launches a powerful script editor for automation.
Stacey,
that's my thing of the week.
Oh, well.
But since you stole it, I'll keep moving on because I have another one.
I want to hear about it because I don't know. YouTube drastically lowers requirements for video monetization.
I found that interesting considering more and more people are getting on the platform.
Used to be you had to have like
1,000
subscribers. Now it's 500.
It was 1,000 plus, I can't remember the amount of watch time.
3,000 hours watch time is the new standard. For shorts, 3 million valid public shorts views in 90 days, though.
That's hard.
That's still a lot, yeah. They used to have 4,000 watch hours and 1,000 subscribers or 10 million shorts views. So I think this is a sensible adjustment. Do you use Google Photos? I do. Their website is adding advanced editing tools that you might have seen before in Google One, including Portrait Light, Portrait Blur, Dynamic, Color Pop, HDR, and Sky. Very similar to the tools if you already use these on Android. But it's now on the desktop.
That'll be nice to see.
And At a Glance comes to the Pixel Watch.
Useful?
Yeah, I'm surprised it didn't have it, to be honest with you.
A glance what?
No, the little at-a-glance feature that's on the home screen of your phone, Android phone.
That's right.
I see. Oh, okay.
It's a complication on the watch. You need it's only available in the rectangular complication slot of the Modular 2 or Modular 3 layouts of the utility watch face. Some third-party faces may also make it available. It's kind of an extension of the assistant. It gives you some of that assistant information, weather, AQI, that kind of stuff. And that's, as far as I know, the Google changelog.
Right on cue.
Does any other show have these?
Oh, all about Androids loaded with them.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I just think we ought to have more of them. Is what I'm saying. More features, more intros and outros.
More stuff.
Stacey, we need one. You know,
more stuff Stacey to keep Stacey
in her hand.
And now it's time for This Week in AI.
Oh, yeah.
People bubble, people pop.
There.
Yeah, there we
perfect.
Go.
Perfect.
There you go.
Sir Paul McCartney says AI has enabled a final Beatles song. The song has cleaned up John Lennon vocals. They think it comes from a 1978 Lennon composition called Now and Then, but Sir Paul has not said. They were considering it as a reunion song for the Beatles in 1995 when they were working on Anthology. Sir Paul had received the demo, according to the BBC, a year earlier from Lennon's widow, Yoko Ono. It was on a cassette labeled For Paul that Lennon made just before he was assassinated in 1980.
Oh, jeez.
But it's lo-fi. The tracks were recorded onto a boombox as a musician sat at a piano in the New York apartment. So the band had attempted to clean up Now and Then, which was apparently a kind of an apology to Paul.
Mm. Huh.
But they couldn't really clean it up. Sir Paul said Jeff Lynne tried it of the Electric Light Orchestra. He wasn't able to. We spent a day, an afternoon really messing with it, but they couldn't make it work. George Harrison refused to work on the song, saying the sound quality of Lennon's vocal was rubbish. It needed a lot of reworking. It had a beautiful verse. It had John singing. Because George didn't like it, we didn't do it. But AI has no opinion. And so they're going to work on it. And apparently will be released soon. We haven't had a new Beatles song in a long, long time. It'll be released sometime this year, according to
the Beeb.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool. There was a lot of computer, I guess you could call it AI, processing done to make the Peter Jackson film Get Back, which was incredible footage shot of the Beatles rehearsing and preparing for a live performance from the Let It Be, which basically was the Let It Be album. And you actually saw them writing the album stuff, but it was originally recorded. They didn't want the vocal dialogue, the conversations. They just wanted the music. So it was mic'd for the music and you couldn't hear the voices. Peter Jackson used all sorts of AI techniques to bring the voices up. If you've not seen it, Get Back. It's on the Disney Plus channel. It's amazing watching Paul McCartney write Get Back and Let It Be, you know, working at stuff with John and George. It's really, and Ringo, it's really amazing.
So it's okay, because I sort of heard a mixed bag about it.
It's long. It's many hours. I don't know, 8 hours, and not a lot happens. Mm-hmm. If you'd have to be a Beatles fan.
What I hear is basically they're just sort of sitting around doing their thing.
They're noodling and talking.
It's just like us, Ant. Just
it's
like
just
us.
Just like this show.
Long. Hey, we're sitting around noodling.
Look here, Mr. Jarvis.
Ringo we over there is tired.
I would never let us do that for 8 hours.
But we I are. Have to say, if
wait,
you're
did
Beatles
you just
fan,
say
I
was Ringo?
Wow, I didn't say that. I said we are entertaining on this show.
Okay, all right then.
Jeff,
which Beatle?
Jeff
which
said.
Beatle are each of us?
I don't know. I was probably just the
I think
security
none of us,
guard.
Yeah, none of us are like the Beatles in any form or fashion.
No.
Yeah.
Researchers.
Which monkeys are each of us, though.
No.
Bitch.
Anyway, if you're a.
Nickelbacks are each of us.
No, I could actually be Mike Nesmith. If you are a Beatles fan, it's really amazing.
Mm.
And it's really interesting to watch Paul sit down at a piano, start noodling around, and all of a sudden Let It Be comes out.
Yeah.
It's like,
it is. That's an amazing.
See, I could dig stuff like that.
It's about the creative process. Yeah. I would really watch it if I were you.
Yeah, see, I could dig that.
There's also a very good interview with Paul McCartney that Rick Rubin does, the producer, called McCartney 123. I can't remember where that is. Uh-huh. But that's also Paul talking about their process. I'm interested in the creative process. I'm a huge Beatles fan. Watching Get Back is watching probably the greatest musicians of that time at their peak of ability working together. It was shortly before the band broke up, though.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some tensions, but working together to create and watching them write Get Back and make it up is brilliant. It's amazing. Oh, so
did you get Rick Rubin's book? You haven't steered me wrong yet.
I did get Rick Rubin's. I gave it to Lisa for her birthday.
Oh.
And we haven't worked through it yet, but I want to work through it because it's all about creativity.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
I give it a try. You haven't steered me wrong yet.
It's National Bourbon Day. Get a nice bourbon. Nice cigar.
I'll see you soon, Bevmo.
Don't be in a big hurry because it's, you know, it's really slow.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting. I think it's a document of
right.
of something that was going on in 1969. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Researchers have discovered that ChatGPT isn't really that funny.
Oh.
When tested, over 90% of the 1,008 generated jokes were the same 25 jokes. The irony is this is from a German researchers. We're not known for their sense of humor. They released a paper. This was with ChatGPT 3.5, not the latest, but they asked it, tell a joke. And basically it came down to about 25. Now, as an example, why did the scarecrow win an award?
Why?
It was outstanding in its field.
Oh, no, that's...
Why did the tomato turn red?
Why?
But you know the answers to these because it saw the salad dressing. Why was the math book sad?
That's horrible.
They're holy terrible, God. Terrible, no good jokes.
Yeah. That was pain on Ann's face.
Oh. I used to have a joke book that had 500 of those for my kid.
Right.
And ChatGPT couldn't absorb all of them?
You remember, how in the beautiful dawn of AI, we were talking about it understands humor. That's a really interesting sign that it's somehow, no, it doesn't. It's making.
Well, but no, when you did that stuff on the show, when you apologized for having, what was it, Jason on?
Calacanis? Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Didn't you use it to write an apology for having Calacanis?
I did. And I wrote a very good apology, which I never.
And it was funny.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah, it was.
It was funny.
So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm calling them as I see them. Google is postponing Bard's EU launch because the EU is worried about privacy. The Irish privacy watchdog said, Google hasn't given us, Google hasn't given us sufficient information about how to respect the EU's data privacy rules. It's Irish, and I like it too. I think that's the problem. They just don't know. Anyway, Bard's not going to launch this weekend, and you can thank the leprechaun for that. Doctors, however, are using ChatGPT. What do you think they're using it for? Diagnosing strange rashes? Skip
conditions?
No. They're using it to improve their bedside manner.
Interesting.
Apparently, some doctors are so poor at relating to humans, they're going to a computer for help.
I'll give them credit for at least considering.
That tracks.
Yeah. At least considering it. Because of all of the stories that I have heard about doctors' offices, at least they're trying.
It was like my apology letter. They're going to ChatGPT to help them. You know, I have a patient. I have some very bad news I need to give them. What would be a humane, compassionate way to communicate that news?
What would be a humane, compassionate way to communicate you had Jason Galakatis on the show? Yeah,
exactly. and we know patients care. In one survey, 85% of patients reported a doctor's compassion was more important than waiting time or cost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no.
And three-quarters of
people... I want that cost down some.
Yeah, well, three-quarters of... Well, it goes together, sort of. If you're compassionate, you wouldn't charge me $1,000 to tell me I have a KP rash.
Right.
In another survey, nearly three-quarters of respondents said they had gone to doctors who were not compassionate. Who hasn't, right?
Mm.
In a study of doctors' conversations with the family of dying patients found many were not very empathetic. It's hard. So here's a way.
Well, yeah, because doctors are trained to keep you alive. So coming to tell someone they can't keep it, it's basically like, hey, I can't do my job.
I failed.
Right.
Yeah. That's hard for anyone.
How can doctors better help patients who are drinking too much alcohol but have not stopped after talking to a therapist? Dr. Pignoni asked his team to write a script for how to talk to these patients compassionately. A week later, no one had done it. All he had was a text his research coordinator and his social worker on the team had put together, and that was not a true script. So he went to this is Dr. Michael Pignoni, chairman of the Department of Internal Medicine at UT Austin.
Mm-hmm.
You want to sing a song?
Oh, no.
Aren't you an alumna of UT Austin?
I am, but
she did give us a hook'em.
Yeah. Hook'em.
Hook'em horns.
Is that the right one, or is it this one?
That's correct. No.
It's this.
There you go.
That's for Ozzy Osbourne. Orange, beautiful nails. Clemson color. Clemson colored nails.
One of the colors of orange, yes.
Yes.
She did well.
So Dr. Pignon tried ChatGPT, which replied instantly with all the talking points the doctors wanted. Social workers, though, said the script needed to be revised for patients with little medical knowledge and translated into Spanish. The ultimate result, which this is all from the New York Times, mm-hmm. which ChatGPT produced when asked to rewrite it at a fifth grade reading level, began with a reassuring introduction.
Oh, nice.
If this is for you, Aunt.
Okay.
If you think you drink too much alcohol, you're not alone. Many people have this problem, but there are medicines that can help you feel better and have a healthier, happier life.
Yes, and it's called moonshine that was filtered through a four-barrel carburetor.
Have you ever heard of heroin?
Are there medicines for alcoholism?
Yeah, well, there's Antabuse, which makes you throw up if you drink.
All right.
That's not exactly helping you feel better and having a healthier, happier life.
Like negative reinforcement. What's the shot everybody's taking for
Ozempic?
Ozempic
has an impact on addictive behaviors.
I asked my daughter, I said, I'm thinking of getting Ozempic. She said, no, you should get Nozempic. She said, the problem
with Ozempic. Is that a ChatGPT joke?
No, she said, yes. She said, the problem with Ozempic is you have to take it for the rest of your life. Because if you stop, you gain more weight back.
Oh.
And start drinking. So, but I was going to ask my doctor for that or Rybelsus. Rybelsus is just a pill.
Well, you should probably ask your doctor and see what they say, and don't just take. Is your daughter a doctor?
No, no, not at all.
Oh, okay. I'm just.
But I think she's like, right. I don't know. I think
some people can gain some of the weight. Like, yes, it is something that you have to stay on, but you can also.
I wouldn't want to take it for the rest of my life.
I think it can help change your metabolic
baseline. Oh, I've heard amazing stories. It's the drug that everybody in Hollywood's doing.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Anyway, so that's they said it was a good script. I made fun of it.
I dig the idea, though.
I think it makes sense. I couldn't write an apology letter for Jason, but that did. It was great. Yeah.
Do you see the breaking news in our Discord from Mr. Howell?
What's the news? What's the news? Twitter is being evicted. Oh, yeah, this is not breaking. I saw this earlier.
There we go. The bumper.
There we go.
The
whole point was to do this. That's breaking news. Twitter is being evicted from its Boulder office. Boulder, Colorado. It's 3 months behind in its rent. Mm. And a judge has signed off on evicting Twitter from its Boulder office. Twitter hasn't paid rent, as far as I know, anywhere. So we'll see what happens.
Makes sense, though, right? They don't care.
They don't care. All right. Let us get our final ad in, and then Stacy has her pick, and Jeff has a number. I'm excited. And I'm going to go home. But
we're not calling him lazy. We do not shame people who do reasonably long shows.
We're gonna be over 2 hours. I feel like if I'm over 2 hours, I'm good. Yeah,
it's a good show.
Yeah, yeah. We've given them their money's worth. You're fine.
Because Stacey, I wanted to hear about your threat about the Privacy and Data Protection Task Force.
Oh,
you can read it in my newsletter on Friday.
What is the privacy?
Sign up.
What is that?
OMG, Jeff, I will murder you.
No, but now we all want to know. I really want to know. What is it, Stacey? Anyway, our show today brought to you. We'll have Stacey can explain or not. after this word from our sponsor.
Thank you, sponsors.
Our show today brought to you by Melissa, the data quality experts. E-commerce, get this, this number is scary. E-commerce losses to online payment fraud, right? In 2022, $41 billion with a B. Wow. That's one reason fraud takes a big bite out of you. But Melissa can solve it, helping organizations tackle identity fraud with an end-to-end process to safely track customer data. They have a whole suite of tools to do this. For example, the biometrics verification step has an algorithm that recognizes a matchup between the user's selfie and their ID image. This works really well, and it's nice for the users. It's not intrusive. It's fast. It's easy. Biometrics verification identifies a set of over 60 different facial features, distinguishes changes between the selfie and the ID image. So even if you grew a beard, right, it still knows it's you. Facial hair, makeup, age difference. That's an old picture. Doesn't matter. Hairstyle, skin imperfections, got a little rash, no problem. Positions and head pose. This technology gives businesses an added layer of security and confidence knowing, yeah, this customer's who they say they are. Payment fraud, $41 billion in 2022. The financial industry and e-commerce retailers are already using AI-powered fraud detection systems to safeguard their customers from fraud. Thanks to Melissa. For example, bank and credit card companies use machine learning algorithms to scrutinize customer data. You can actually tell from the things like the purchase history and the location to spot suspicious transactions. Retailers leverage AI-powered fraud detection systems to prevent fraudulent orders and chargebacks. With Melissa, you can reduce risk, ensure compliance, and keep customers happy. Melissa's ID tools give you all kinds of nice features. I'll give you a couple. Proof of life scans. So it checks the face and eye movement to make sure that that's a real person. It's not a cardboard cutout. They do document verification that captures ID and document data using a machine-readable zone and optical character recognition document scanning so the critical information can be extracted easily from passports, utility bills, driver's licenses, and so forth. Biometrics, of course, uses smart facial recognition and facial comparison algorithms to recognize a match between a selfie and the ID. Melissa's been doing this since 1985, long before these technologies were there. They've been there for you to help you keep your address and contact information up to date, to enrich it, and now to guarantee that your customer is who they say they are. Melissa continually undergoes independent security audits so your data is safe, and Melissa is fully compliant, SOC 2, HIPAA, GDPR compliant. Your data is protected and compliant. Make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Avoid fraud. It can cost you an awful lot. Bad data can cost you a lot. Get started today with Melissa and 1,000 records cleaned for free. Melissa.com/twit. That's Melissa.com/twit. And now Stacey Higginbotham's.
Before we get to that, I do want to hear Stacey on Google Home's script editor, because I figured she'd have a lot to say about that.
So that was my thing of the week.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, you set it up really nicely for me. Thank you. But do you really? I will tell you very briefly what the FCC said today, if you want to know.
Okay, sure. Yes, we do want to know.
Okay. The Federal Communications Commission has created a data privacy task force and enforcement bureau. It's going to be part of their enforcement bureau. They announced this today, and the goal is to figure out a way to stop wireless carriers from selling your data.
Oh.
And they explained their legal ideas and how to do this, so the laws that would allow them to do this. There's a couple, and they also said that they are going to create standards that carriers need to follow when not doing SIM swaps, but changing out a customer's phone number so people can't use SIM swapping as a way to hack someone's account. So that's also like a nice thing. And they did one other thing that I can't remember right off the top of my head. So these are good steps.
And you're going to write this up for Friday for Stacey on IoT.com.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why I don't have all three things right in front of me right now for this.
No. That's good. Thank you for doing that.
My notes are over there.
Thank you for getting the story from the FCC. I look forward to reading that. We'll talk next week about it. How about that?
Or not. Whichever. I don't know how much people care about this.
Honestly, this is the thing every regulator should be focusing on. We had a story this week. I should have had it in our rundown that the United
was
States
it from Wired.
Yes, you know what I'm talking about. It was the United States intelligence agencies buying data from data brokers illegally and using it. Data about all of us.
That's okay. What?
We talked about that in March on our show, because that's actually when the director of the FBI talked about it. What they released was a report that shows how deep this is. And it's really freaking deep, y'all. You could do Stacey on privacy if you want to create that section.
No, I think this have a privacy story. The U.S. is openly stockpiling dirt on all its citizens, writes Del Cameron in Wired. This is the newly declassified report from the Office of the Director of the National Intelligence. They're buying a ton of data, and it's not even legal, right? They're not supposed to be spying on Americans.
Well, here's what the
Or is it a loophole?
It's the FBI.
It's kind of a loophole.
So the FBI is doing it, and they're in charge of national law enforcement. What they're loopholing is the Fourth Amendment, because they're not getting a warrant for this information. So they're basically using a data broker instead of going to a wireless carrier. Mm-hmm. Because if you go to a wireless carrier and say, I'm interested in
information about this phone. Then you need a pen warrant
You need a warrant. Now, to avoid that, they just say, oh, well, I'll just call up a data broker, and they get the same information from the data broker without having to go through a warrant. They can also get credit card information, not from the credit card company, just from a data broker. And that's the stuff that they've been buying, as outlined in this report.
The report states the government believes it can persistently track the phones of millions of Americans without a warrant as long as it pays for the information.
Yeah, so is it illegal?
Right. The FTC tried to regulate. The FTC came down against a data broker. They tried to sue a data broker. The data broker fought the suit and the settlement. And basically, a federal court said, you know what, FTC, you got to prove harm.
Right.
To show that these data brokers are nefarious. And the FTC couldn't quite prove harm.
I think the judge in effect instructing them. Look, if you want this case to win, you've got to come back with some harm.
Yes. So if you could actually find out somebody who was picked up by the FBI without a warrant, that's harm. Not saying that the person's innocent, but we do have due process for a reason.
The government's position is that this is publicly available data. Anybody can buy it.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. I don't need a warrant. It's public.
Right. So the FCC, by classifying, there's a couple things. Okay. We're going to put it in the newsletter because there's a lot there. Because they're going to have to classify certain like geolocation data right now isn't considered proprietary. And I don't believe it's considered CNPI, which is what the FCC, protected network data, which is data about what phone number, where it is, who is attached to it.
What's really happened is, and the ODNI says this in the report, if the government said you and you and you and you, in fact, all of you have to carry a tracking device and we should be able to log and track all your social interactions, know where you are, see everything you do, that would be clearly wrong. We voluntarily carry these devices in our pockets.
Mm-hmm.
That information is then sold by carriers and others, app makers.
Mm-hmm.
And the government says, oh, thank you. Thanks very much. I didn't have to make you do it.
Yeah, and actually the government ended up mandating this because we had to have access to E911, which meant every phone has to have GPS.
Yeah,
not that anyone would buy a phone without GPS,
that's a good point.
Anyway, okay.
Yeah, I think this is
privacy.
Yeah, no, it's a huge story, and it's really an issue. And I think that's when you say let's ban TikTok, the Chinese government can also buy this information. Mm-hmm. This information is widely available. That's what we've got to solve.
It's been there long before the internet. We used Axiom at Time Inc. to sell you magazines.
But this is a lot better. And it also, when law enforcement says, "Oh, we're going dark," you know, this end-to-end encryption, we know it's going to be a very big problem. We won't be able to arrest bad guys. They're not going dark. They have more information than they've ever had before. Technology's enabled them to follow us around, and we're going along with it. So I think this is might be the biggest story, frankly, of privacy, and really supersedes a lot of these other trivial things that people are worried about.
Mm-hmm. You think?
Thank you, Stacey. I will look forward to that report on Friday.
Distraction, as you said previously.
Yeah. Just, you know, don't, you know.
TikTok is ruining our kids.
Yeah.
But now Stacey has her thing.
So
my thing, which, you know, scripts. I do love privacy.
Scripts.
But this is more for y'all, for real people who want to play with Google Home. Google Home, if you're in the preview of the new Google Home, which if you're a smart home person, I say go do it, man. It's awesome. Or at least it's much better. It puts Google on par with more comparable systems. But it also gives you the script editor, which is the only way you're going to be able to do some of the cool stuff that you can do with like Smart Things and others when you're doing an automation. It also is the only thing that it's going to allow you to trigger, to create trigger events from sensors.
This looks pretty darn geeky. I mean, this is programmed.
So, yes. So what you need to do is you need to go to home.google.com, and you need to be in your Google account that's tied to your Google Home account, by the way. If you're Jeff and you have two accounts, or if you're me and you have two accounts. So when you go there, this is using, is it YAML? Is that how you say it?
Yeah, YAML.
YAML.
Yet another markup language.
Yes. But it's pretty.
Oh, like, wow.
I can figure it out.
That's my front door. Oh, wow. Yeah. Fortunately, I've turned off all the other cameras. Holy moly.
Yeah, this is also where you're going to go in to see your Nest cams, which people had wanted web access to their Nest cams.
Yes. Okay, I got that. So now I have routines, so I can add a household routine. So let's do
Go down. No. Don't go to add new routine. Go to the right below cameras. Go to automations.
Then
add new. Sorry.
So let's say bedtime. I'm going to do a bedtime routine. So I need the Google Home app to edit it.
No. Don't go there. Go to the add new up there.
Just do add new here.
Yeah. Okay. These are already established ones.
Oh,
this is where you're going to do. Yeah.
Okay. So this is really coding.
But is this like basic or is this something where?
It's YAML, which means it's a markup language. So you have to know some things.
My cousin going to be able to figure this out?
Yeah. You're going to be able to figure it out. We could do this.
Maybe not. I mean, I'm going to figure it out, and I don't really code. I don't code at all.
Uh-huh.
But you can figure out, I mean, because you're like TV, front door. It's what you've named your devices. That's mm-hmm. what you're going to be using mm-hmm. to create it.
It also has autocomplete. So,
So it's like
I can choose
IDE.
It's kind of an IDE. I can choose from, you know, assistant event, okay, Google, or doorbell press, or, you know, so forth. So I can respond to a doorbell press here. You know, when the doorbell press happens from the front door, and that was all auto-filled, then, and there's certain conditions here, and I can, you know, see what those are.
Like
then,
when sun sets.
Yeah, and the sun's down. If my doorbell rings after midnight, then release the hounds, that kind of thing.
Excellent.
Yeah. So this is going to let you do this, and it's going to give you finer grain things. I think this is like the home automation geeks are going to they're not going to freaking love it because they don't freaking love anything, but it gives you a lot more power.
This is very
powerful.
It reminds me of
Groovy.
Are they a grumpy bunch?
They have opinion. Like anybody who gets really deep into something, they have opinions about what their favorite things are, and Google is never on that list from a home automation standpoint.
So I already have some routines. I have a bedtime routine. I have a, you know, commuting to work routine, a good morning routine, but I can now write. And those we set up the old fashioned way,
And this is the only way you're going to be able to use to set up a Matter device today. to use a matter-based sensor to trigger an automation, because right now you can't use sensors to trigger automations in the Google Home stuff.
I just pressed the good morning button. I don't know what's happening at home, but it's happening.
There you go.
I hope nobody's there. Oh, everything's just waking up. That's this is powerful. I would bet OpenHAB and other home automation systems have something similar.
Yeah, Home Assistant. Yeah. Oh yeah, they do. Home Assistant has one. SmartThings took away theirs, which is really a shame because I did use it and I like to use it for troubleshooting actually.
Nice. So visit home.google.com, and if you have Google Home devices,
you have to be in the public beta, the public preview of the Google Home app.
Apparently,
for this
I am.
To work.
I don't know how I got there.
Yeah.
So. I mean, I didn't apply for it.
Yeah, they sent you a notification and, oh, okay.
Oh, wait a minute. Let's go to our studio and see what I can do. So I can do it in my home, but for the studio, I need the Google Home app to add devices. So there's some differences going on here. Okay. But we have Google Home devices around here. That's cool. So you can even write a Google Assistant script that's triggered by your voice.
It's pretty slick.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really neat. All right. Thank you, Stacey. That's your thing. I don't know what it is, but that's what it is.
It's scripting.
Automations.
I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
No, it's cool.
I'll tell you at the end. Okay.
We're not at the end?
No, I'll tell you now. Okay. Hey, this week, y'all, tomorrow.
What?
My podcast, I mentioned the moon one, the guys building the LTE network on the moon. So if you're into space and all of that, you can find out how like radiation
affects. It's finally going to come
software.
Out.
It's coming out tomorrow. So.
Yay. You also have an article about Microsoft's IoT coding language device script.
Oh, yeah. That's actually really cool for people who want to build on
this
Arduinos.
This is even more powerful. Yeah, look at this.
Well, that's for controlling Arduinos without having to use like a derivative of C++. Right. It lets you use JavaScript, basically, or device. It's like a job.
So tomorrow, listen to Stacey on IoT, the podcast. Find out how they're putting cellular technology on the moon.
That's crazy.
Boys and girls. That's LTE fine. On the moon. StaceyOnIoT.com. Mr. Jeff Jarvis, do you have a number for us?
Yeah, we'll find something. So I want to just mention that the EU took a step toward regulating AI. So that's going to be really interesting to watch.
That's in my newsletter this week, too.
Well, there you go. Everybody get Stacey's newsletter. Right. Stacey, actually, I'm not trying to play a game here. Can you summarize the latest of what that looks like? No.
Move on.
We've talked about I can't right now because I've only.
Is this the story that we did earlier about the
We've done it earlier, but they're actually moving forward.
They're actually moving forward. That's all. Just for the record. I have a silly little photo thing, but we were also going to discuss beforehand Spotify, which was going to take over podcasts, getting rid of 200 people and kind of ruining podcasting and then say, never mind.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little pivot from them to be a creator of content to supporting other podcast creators.
Do you trust them?
Well, they bought Anchor FM, which is how I created my
Anchor
Have
makes
I mentioned
it
Leo
really
on the line,
easy.
My little podcast that I did 10 years ago. Anyway,
Anchor makes it really
easy. In case
easy,
I got
though.
Fired. Yeah, I love Anchor. Well, it's no longer Anchor. It's like the Spotify podcast studio. They've rebranded everything. I think it's an interesting thing. They kind of want to be more like YouTube, like support creators than like Gimlet, like creating. And they bought Gimlet.
Will they respect podcasts. RSS?
No, of course not. What? Yes, well, they will. No, they will. Anchor FM's podcasts are RSS compliant. So I imagine they'll continue to do that. I think they've really learned a lesson, right? That, you know, they spent lot of money. They spent half a billion dollars, if
so
not.
Do they regret Joe Rogan?
$100 million on him, right?
Yeah. Caller Daddy was $60 million over 3 years. They bought The Ringer. Must have cost at least $100 million.
Gimlet Media.
Gimlet, Parcast. So it's interesting. I think to some degree, they're seeing that the podcast industry isn't as, lucrative as they might have thought it is. On the other hand, they were doing it because they were under the thumb of the music industry and they wanted to create content. So I think it's, I think almost this story is a pivot from of Spotify from being, you know, initially a place where you would stream music, then added, you know, other audio content where you'd stream audio content to being a facilitator, because they need creators to create a lot of content so that they don't have to
lean
worry
on the
about the
music side
industry.
Of things. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's my, I don't think it's a bad thing for podcasting necessarily. I'm not ready to cry wolf yet. We'll see. I mean, I certainly will if it turns out. We get one immediate benefit. We've been paying for a service that Spotify bought called Podsites. They've rolled it now into Spotify ad tech, and it's free. So we were paying, it was expensive, but some advertisers did demand it, so we were using it, and now we can get it for free. So that's huge. We've been talking to Libsyn about direct ad insertion. We use Megaphone, which is a Spotify company right now, also expensive. We're very interested to see what they do with Megaphone. If they drop the price of Megaphone, that will be a huge deal for us. So it could be very good for us in the long run. We'll see.
And then down in my picks, I put in a little photo thing for Mr. Ant. A camera squared on one space in the sky, and then you get the sense that Earth is, in fact, rolling around in space.
24 hours of Earth rotation. Well,
what?
That just turning the camera upside down.
I know. That's kind of cool.
And by the way, if you were on... That's not what the Earth's rotation looks like.
Oh, that's hilarious. That's hilarious. I like the Milky Way showing up, though.
Yeah, but
it's kind of fun. It's fun.
If you were floating 6 feet above the Earth and it was rotating, it wouldn't look like this.
That is hilarious.
The sky would stay the same. The farm would move. Okay, fine.
Never mind.
Touche, Mr. Jarvis.
24 hours of the camera's rotation.
Touche. I won't bring any more bridges to the show again.
He's punishing you. He's punishing you.
I am indeed. No, I'm dizzy from watching that.
This Jeez. Dude is falling out of his chair. He is so done. You ready to go home?
I'm melting. Do you have something you want to pick?
Yes, my pick is for those of you using Lightroom Mobile, there was a recent update that's been rolling out. I haven't gotten an update yet, but they've made some changes as far as how you can import your images on your phone into Lightroom to do your post-processing. Now there's really no import. They're just sort of there. So that sort of speeds up workflow.
That's nice.
And then they also added this little cool feature that basically records your editing process so you can share out your editing process.
Oh, I love that.
How you did that. How you created your image.
There have been drawing programs like Procreate does.
Yeah, Procreate does.
That will show you
shows all the
drawing.
Strokes.
And I love that. Procreate's oh, that'll be cool. Fun. What a great way for you to share how you edit a photo.
And I've done that a time or three, but it's a lot of work for me to do it with the
You'd
screen
recorder.
You'd
have to recorder. Do it in like OBS Studio and record everything. Yeah. So this will record it for you.
Yeah,
very nice.
Pretty slick. So I haven't gotten an update yet. If you got it, try it out. Let me know your thoughts on it.
You know, as you know, I like my Leica Q2 camera.
La-dee-da.
Leica has a Photos app, which imports your photos to your computer or your phone.
Yep.
Now supports direct support for Darkroom. So
kind
of like Lightroom, Darkroom is built in now to do all your photo editing. So they've streamlined that as well. That makes sense. This is a smart thing to do because most photos are now done
on the phone.
On the phone.
Yeah. Just cut out one less step there.
Yep.
And lastly, I just want to say, have a laugh. Check out Greg Warren special on YouTube. This is a free special that he put out. And I enjoyed it because I like to watch stand-up comedians and pretty much a wide range of stand-up comedians. So check out Greg Warren and have a laugh, folks.
Where the field corn grows.
He has a funny story because... Previously, he was a sales rep for Jif, selling peanut butter.
What'd you do before comedy? I sold peanut butter.
So he'll do about 20 minutes just on peanut butter. So, yeah, go check that out.
It's funny because it's true.
Because it's true.
Did you ever put peanut butter on your forehead so you could cut your dog's toenails?
That would be no, sir.
It seems to be a popular trope on TikTok. I'm just saying. Well, thank God this is over.
And we talked about Google today, dude.
Did I just say that out loud? I was just thinking it.
I like that I'm not the person doing this. This feels real good to me. Thank
he's
you.
So he's I'm, so ready to
I'm
go
trying
home.
To get you out of your thing. I got to go home and have a strip waffle.
And bourbon.
Stacy is going to do a really good thing about the FCC and privacy on Friday. Her podcast tomorrow is all about putting LTE on the moon. You got to go to StacyOnIoT.com. That's her website. Listen to the IoT podcast with Kevin Toefel. Get the newsletter. Sign up for the events. Participate in Stacy's life because God knows it's better than mine. Enjoy.
Maybe not participate in my life. But, you know,
participate
in the content that I'm creating.
An introvert wants to hear.
No, you know what? I love it because Stacy for so long has been a journalist working for great publications and stuff, and she's doing it on her own now, and I think that's really fantastic.
And kicking ass.
And I think it's everybody who loves you should support it.
Yes,
and support your efforts because. This is what everybody wants to do. This is the future of journalism.
Yeah, I hope so.
They do. Your audience is like really awesome. They
good.
Pop up all
it's
the
not
time.
Not mine. It's yours now.
Yay, y'all.
I give it to you. Thank you, Stacy. Jeff Jarvis, golly, this guy. He may look like what was it?
The New Yorker cartoon.
But he's actually alive and living and teaches journalism. He's the director of he's prestigious director of the Town Knight Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. Also the author of a fabulous book, which he cannot stop plugging, called The Gutenberg Parenthesis.
Only once this time.
It comes out this month. We have to have 29th. A big party on the 29th. What are we going to do? Help me.
I'm going to be in England promoting it on the 5th of July, so I'll be gone that week.
Oh, no.
Yes, I will be.
Oh, is it? What's the website? The Gutenberg Parenthesis?
Just GutenbergParenthesis.com.
Oh, I left out the N in parenthesis.
No. I know it's long.
Yeah, it's hard. No.
And I had two T's in Gutenberg.
Oh, and there's an E in that's Gutenberg, yeah.
Sorry, Jeff.
Parenthesis is hard to spell. Gutenberg. There we go. I got it.
Should I send Andrew your way? potential URL.
I wrote the Gutenberg. So. There it is. The Gutenberg. And you can get it right now. And Jeff, you don't care where people buy it from. Amazon, Bloomberg, Blackwell's.
Bloomsbury has a discount. Amazon will have a discount. Blackwell's, I love, has a discount.
Yeah. And they'll ship it for free.
I have to put up the Indie Books link. I forgot to put that up.
I have a confession. I finally ordered your book, sir. For the last several weeks, I keep telling myself, I need to order this book. And I never think to do it as soon as the show goes stop recording. It just sort of slips my mind. So I finally just ordered it today during the show.
Thank you, sir.
I don't like to do stuff like this during the show, but I was like, I can't forget. So just order today.
Well, I do Twitter during the show.
It's $29.
And I chat on the Discord. So
wow.
Well,
that's all I try to do.
I just bought it, so it's fine. I don't care. I want to have it so that even though you won't be here, we can hold it up and we can eat cake.
Thank you.
Wear funny hats. Thank you.
Says mine will be here on the 30th.
Yeah, very excited. And you're going to be out
and
about promoting
it. I'll
be
in San Francisco on July 25th at the Commonwealth Club doing a talk on it.
Can we get you to? Can we get a car for you to drive up and visit us? Or
yes, are we going to come up with the 26th? I'm in the calendar.
Oh, awesome.
Yes. You're
stuck with me.
Dinner's on me. That'll be great.
Oh, that's great.
But dinner will be great.
Yeah. Thank you, Jeff. Ant Pruitt, antpruitt.com/prints. Get the prints because he's a prince among men.
Order a print.
He's on hands-on photography. Watch this week. It's going to be a big one. What time?
We try to get it out the door roughly.
Oh, you don't let people watch you do it, do you?
No, I don't do it live.
So subscribe.
Try to get it out the door. Mr. Victor is such a dadgum good editor, and he makes it all pretty and sound good. So we try it about 3 p.m. Pacific on Thursdays.
on Thursdays. Tomorrow. Okay. Mm-hmm. On the Twitter, @_Pruitt.
But what's bigger, though, is tomorrow is our Club Twit Fireside Chat.
This is really where Ant shines. He has done such a great job with the club. He's our community manager. Tomorrow, 9 a.m. Mm-hmm. Pacific, Sean Powers from Floss Weekly.
Yep.
Stacey's Higginbotham.
No, that's not.
Oh, we've got a book club coming up in a week or two.
The 29th. Huh? Better get reading on the Terraformers from Anna Lee Newitz. That's her newest. Mm-hmm. I hear very good things about it.
I won't comment yet, but go ahead.
It's coming back to that capitalism mutual aid kind of conversation.
And I really want to thank Ant because he has put together a very exciting interview with Hugh Howey, the author of Wool, which is the basis for the Apple TV Plus hit Silo, renewed for a second season.
That show is so daggum good.
Very exciting. Man. So 1 o'clock Pacific on the 29th, Hugh Howey in conversation with Ant Pruitt. Again, this is club only. The bourbon-fueled Inside Twit After Hours is on the 14th. Rod Pyle is on the 27th. That's both of July.
There's obviously a correction. There's going to be bourbon. There's going to be scotch. There's probably going to be some of that synthetic alcohol.
Because we've got to get rid of that crap. Jesus, stuff is awful. If you are not yet a member of Club Twit, it's not too late. You can join. It is very affordable. $7 a month gets you ad-free versions of all of our shows, gets you access to the Discord where lots of stuff happens. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, you know, like behind the velvet rope. You got all those events. We've got shows we don't put out otherwise. We only put them out for the club. Hands on Macintosh with Micah Sargent. Hands on Windows with Paul Thurrott. I think the biggest, newest launch is Scott Wilkinson's Home Theater Geeks. Mm-hmm. This Week in Space started in the club. It's one way we can develop new shows and bring them out because your $7 a month pays for all of that. Podcasting is struggling. But the future, I think, of what we do is with you. If you like what we produce and you want us to keep producing it, it's not a lot of money, a latte or two a month, $7 a month, but it makes a huge difference to us. Twit.tv/Club Twit. There's also an annual plan, family plan, and corporate plans as well.
And for everybody that's currently members, feel free to tell others about it. Say, hey, check us out.
Spread the word. If we can get everybody in the club, it really will be the future, I think, for what we do.
Future, yep.
Yep. Clearly what needs to happen. Thank you, Stacey. Thank you, Ant. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you especially for listening and watching. We really appreciate you for putting up with us every Wednesday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2100 UTC, live.twit.tv for This Week in Google. Subscribe.
Please and thank you.
Please. That way you'll get it automatically. You can download copies from twit.tv/twig. There is also a YouTube channel. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.
Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here. In case you hadn't heard, Home Theater Geeks is back. Each week, I bring you the latest audio-video news, tips and tricks to get the most out of your AV system, product reviews, and more. You can enjoy Home Theater Geeks only if you're a member of Club Twit, which costs $7 a month, or you can subscribe to Home Theater Geeks by itself for only $2.99 a month. I hope you'll join me for a weekly dose of Home Theater Geekitude.